He shifted awkwardly on his chair before beginning.
During the time of madness, while the world was still being broken, the earth was in upheaval, and humankind was being scattered like dust on the wind. We Ogier were scattered too, driven from the steading into the exile and the long wandering, when the longing was graven on our hearts.
He gave Moraine another sidelong look. His long eyebrows drew down into two points.
I will try to be brief, but this is not a thing that can be told too briefly. It is of the others I must speak now. Those few Ogier who held in their steading, while around them the world was tearing apart. And of the Aes Sedai.
He avoided looking at Moraine now.
The male Aes Sedai, who were dying even as they destroyed the world in their madness. It was to those Aes Sedai, those who had so far managed to avoid the madness, that the steading first made the offer of sanctuary. Many accepted, for in the steading they were protected from the taint of the Dark One that was killing their kind. But they were cut off from the true source. It was not just that they could not wield the One Power or touch the source. They could no longer even sense that the source existed. In the end, none could accept that isolation, and one by one they left the steading, hoping that by that time the taint was gone. It never was.
Some in Tar Valon, Moraine said quietly, claim that Ogier Sanctuary prolonged the breaking and made it worse. Others say that if all those men had been allowed to go mad at once, there would have been nothing left of the world. I am of the blue Aja, Loyal. Unlike the red Aja, we hold to the second view. Sanctuary helped to save what could be saved. Continue, please.
Loyal nodded gratefully.
Relieved of a concern, Rand realized.
As I was saying,
the Ogier went on,
the Aes Sedai, the male Aes Sedai, left. But before they went, they gave a gift to the Ogier in thanks for our sanctuary. The ways. Enter a way gate, walk for a day, and you may depart through another way gate 100 miles from where you started. Or 500. Time and distance are strange in the ways. Different paths, different bridges, lead to different places. And how long it takes to get there depends on which path you take. It was a marvelous gift, made more so by the times, for the ways are not part of the world we see around us, nor perhaps of any world outside themselves. Not only did the Ogier so gifted not have to travel through the world, where even after the breaking men fought like animals to live, in order to reach another steading, but within the ways, there was no breaking. The land between two steading might split open into deep canyons or rise in mountain ranges, but in the way, between them, there was no change. When the last Aes Sedai left the steading, they gave to the elders a key, a talisman that could be used for growing more. They are a living thing in some fashion, the ways and the way gates. I do not understand it. No Ogier ever has, and even the Aes Sedai have forgotten, I am told. Over the years the exile ended for us, as those Ogier who had been gifted by the Aes Sedai found a steading where Ogier had returned from the long wandering. They grew away to it. With the stonework we learned during the exile, we built cities for men and planted the groves to comfort the Ogier who did the building, so the longing would not overcome them. To those groves, ways were grown. There was a grove and a way gate at Mothal de Daranel, but that city was razed during the Trolloc Wars, no stone left standing on another, and the grove was chopped down and burned by Trolloc fires.
He left no doubt which had been the greater crime.
Waygates are all but impossible to destroy, Moraine said, and humankind not much less so. There are people at Faldara still, though not the great city the Ogier built, and the Waygate yet stands.
How did they make them? Egwene asked.
Her puzzled look took in Moraine and Loyal both.
The Aes Sedai, the men. If they couldn't use the one power in Istedding, how could they make the ways? Or did they use the power at all? Their part of the true source was tainted, is tainted. I don't know much about what Aes Sedai can do yet. Maybe it's a silly question.
Loyal explained.
Each Istedding has a waygate on its border, but outside. Your question is not silly. You found the seed of why we do not dare travel the ways. No Ogier has used the ways in my lifetime and before. By edict of the elders, all the elders of all the Istedding, none may, human or Ogier. The ways were made by men wielding power fouled by the Dark One. About 1,000 years ago, during what you humans call the War of the 100 Years, the ways began to change. So slowly in the beginning that none really noticed, they grew dank and dim. Then darkness fell along the bridges. Some who went in were never seen again. Travelers spoke of being watched from the dark. The numbers who vanished grew, and some who came out had gone mad, raving about Machinshin, the Black Wind. Aes Sedai healers could aid some, but even with Aes Sedai help, they were never the same. And they never remembered anything of what had occurred. Yet it was as if the darkness had sunken into their bones. They never laughed again, and they feared the sound of wind.
For a moment there was silence, but for the cat purring beside Moraine's chair, and the snap and crackle of the fire, popping out sparks. Then Nynaeve burst out angrily.
And you expect us to follow you into that? You must be mad!
Which would you choose instead? Moraine asked quietly. The white cloaks within Camlann, or the Trollocs without? Remember that my presence in itself gives some protection from the Dark One's works.
Nynaeve settled back with an exasperated sigh.
You still have not explained to me, Loyal said, why I should break the edict of the elders, and I have no desire to enter the ways. Muddy as they often are, the roads men make have served me well enough since I left Istedding Shangtai.
Humankind and Ogier, everything that lives, we are at war with the Dark One, Moraine said. The greater part of the world does not even know it yet, and most of the few who do fight skirmishes and believe they are battles. While the world refuses to believe, the Dark One may be at the brink of victory. There is enough power in the eye of the world to undo his prison. If the Dark One has found some way to bend the eye of the world to his use...
Rand wished the lamps in the room were lit. Evening was creeping over Camlann, and the fire in the fireplace did not give enough light. He wanted no shadows in the room.
What can we do? Matt burst out. Why are we so important? Why do we have to go to the Blight? The Blight!
Moraine did not raise her voice, but it filled the room, compelling. Her chair by the fire suddenly seemed like a throne. Suddenly even more gaze would have paled in her presence.
One thing we can do. We can try. What seems like chance is often the pattern. Three threads have come together here, each giving a warning. The Eye. It cannot be chance. It is the pattern. You three did not choose. You were chosen by the pattern. And you are here, where the danger is known. You can step aside and perhaps doom the world. Running, hiding, will not save you from the weaving of the pattern. Or you can try. You can go to the Eye of the World, three Taviren, three center points of the web, placed where the danger lies. Let the pattern be woven around you there, and you may save the world from the shadow. The choice is yours. I cannot make you go.
I'll go,
Rand said, trying to sound resolute. However hard he sought the void, images kept flashing through his head. Tam in the farmhouse and the flock in the pasture. It had been a good life. He had never really wanted anything more. There was comfort, a small comfort, hearing Perrin and Matt add their agreement to his. They sounded as dry-mouthed as he.
I suppose there isn't any choice for Egwene or me either, Nynaeve said.
Moraine nodded.
You are part of the pattern, too, both of you in some fashion. Perhaps not Tavirin, perhaps, but strong even so. I have known it since Berlon, and no doubt by this time the Fades know it too, and Baalzamon. Yet you have as much choice as the young men. You could remain here, proceed to Tar Valon once the rest of us have gone.
Stay behind, Egwene exclaimed. Let the rest of you go off into danger while we hide under the covers? I won't do it.
She caught the Aes Sedai's eye and drew back a little, but not all of her defiance vanished.
I won't do it, she muttered stubbornly.
I suppose that means both of us will accompany you.
Nynaeve sounded resigned, but her eyes flashed when she added,
You still need my herbs, Aes Sedai, unless you've suddenly gained some ability I don't know about.
Her voice held a challenge Rand did not understand, but Moraine merely nodded and turned to the Ogier.
Well, Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Holland.
Loyal opened his mouth twice, his tufted ears twitching, before he spoke.
Yes, well. The Green Man, the Eye of the World. They are mentioned in the books, of course, but I don't think any Ogier has actually seen them in, quite a long time. I suppose... But must it be the ways?
Moraine nodded, and his long eyebrows sagged till the ends brushed his cheeks.
Very well, then. I suppose I must guide you. Elder Harmon would say it's no less than I deserve for being so hasty all the time.
Our choices are made, then, Moraine said. And now that they are made, we must decide what to do about them and how.
Long into the night they planned. Moraine did most of it, with Loyal's advice concerning the ways, but she listened to questions and suggestions from everyone. Once dark fell, Lan joined them, adding his comments in that iron-cored drawl. Nynaeve made a list of what supplies they needed, dipping her pen in the inkwell with a steady hand despite the way she kept muttering under her breath. Rand wished he could be as matter-of-fact as the wisdom. He could not stop pacing up and down as if he had energy to burn or burst from it. He knew his decision was made, knew it was the only one he could make with the knowledge he had, but that did not make him like it. The Blight. Sheol Ghul was somewhere in the Blight, beyond the blasted lands. He could see the same worry in Matt's eyes, the same fear he knew was in his own. Matt sat with his hands clasped, knuckles white. If he let go, Rand thought, he would be clutching the dagger from Shadar Logoth instead. There was no worry on Perrin's face at all, but what was there was worse. A mask of weary resignation. Perrin looked as though he had fought something until he could fight it no longer, and was waiting for it to finish him. Yet sometimes...
We do what we must, Rand, he said. The Blight.
For an instant those yellow eyes lit with eagerness, flashing in the fixed tiredness of his face, as if they had a life of their own, apart from the big blacksmith's apprentice.
There's good hunting along the Blight, he whispered.
Then he shuddered, as if he had just heard what he had said, and once more his face was resigned. And Egwene. Rand drew her apart at one point, over by the fireplace, where those planning around the table could not hear.
Egwene, I...
Her eyes, like big dark pools drawing him in, made him stop and swallow.
It's me the Dark One's after, Egwene. Me and Matt and Perrin. I don't care what Moraine Sedai says. In the morning you and Nynaeve could start for home or Tar Valon, or anywhere you want to go, and nobody will try to stop you. Not the Trollocs, not the Fades, not anybody. As long as you aren't with us. Go home, Egwene. Or go to Tar Valon. But go.
He waited for her to tell him she had as much right to go where she wanted as he did, that he had no right to tell her what to do. To his surprise, she smiled and touched his cheek.
"Thank you, Rand," she said softly.
He blinked and closed his mouth as she went on.
"You know I can't, though. Maureen said I told us what Min saw in Bearlawn. You should have told me who Min was. I thought... Well, Min says I am part of this, too. And Nynaeve. Maybe I'm not Ta'veren," she stumbled over the word. "But the pattern sends me to the eye of the world, too, it seems. Whatever involves you involves me. But Egwene... Who is Elaine?"
For a minute he stared at her, then told the simple truth.
"She's the daughter heir to the throne of Andor."
Her eyes seemed to catch fire.
"If you can't be serious for more than a minute, Randall Thor, I do not want to talk to you."
Incredulous, he watched her stiff back return to the table, where she leaned on her elbows next to Moraine to listen to what the warder was saying.
"I need to talk to Perrin," he thought. "He knows how to deal with women."
Master Gil entered several times, first to light the lamps, then to bring food with his own hands, and later to report on what was happening outside. White cloaks were watching the inn from down the street in both directions. There had been a riot at the gates to the inner city, with the Queen's guards arresting white cockades and red alike. Someone had tried to scratch the dragon's fang on the front door and been sent on his way by Lamgwyn's foot. If the innkeeper found it odd that Loyal was with them, he gave no sign of it. He answered the few questions Moraine put to him without trying to discover what they were planning, and each time he came, he knocked at the door and waited till Lan opened it for him, just as if it were not his inn and his library. On his last visit, Moraine gave him the sheet of parchment covered in Nynaeve's neat hand.
"It won't be easy this time of night," he said, shaking his head as he perused the list. "But I'll arrange it all."
Moraine added a small wash-leather bag that clinked as she handed it to him by the drawstrings.
"Good. And see that we are awakened before daybreak. The watchers will be at their least alert then."
"We'll leave them watching an empty box, Aes Sedai," Master Gil grinned.
Rand was yawning by the time he shuffled out of the room with the rest in search of baths and beds. As he scrubbed himself, with a coarse cloth in one hand and a big yellow cake of soap in the other, his eyes drifted to the stool beside Matt's tub. The golden-sheathed tip of the dagger from Shadar Logoth peeked from under the edge of Matt's neatly folded coat. Lan glanced at it from time to time, too. Rand wondered if it was really as safe to have around as Moraine claimed.
"Do you think my doll ever believe it?"
Matt laughed, scrubbing his back with a long-handled brush.
"Me, saving the world. My sisters won't know whether to laugh or cry."
He sounded like the old Matt. Rand wished he could forget the dagger. It was pitch black when he and Matt finally got up to their room under the eaves, the stars obscured by clouds. For the first time in a long while, Matt undressed before getting into bed, but he casually tucked the dagger under his pillow, too. Rand blew out the candle and crawled into his own bed. He could feel the wrongness from the other bed, not from Matt, but from beneath his pillow. He was still worrying about it when sleep came. From the first, he knew it was a dream, one of those dreams that was not entirely dream. He stood staring at the wooden door, its surface dark and cracked and rough with splinters. The air was cold and dank, thick with the smell of decay. In the distance, water dripped, the splashes hollow echoes down stone corridors.
"Deny it. Deny him, and his power fails."
He closed his eyes and concentrated on the Queen's blessing, on his bed, on himself asleep in his bed. When he opened his eyes, the door was still there. The echoing splashes came on his heartbeat, as if his pulse counted time for them. He sought the flame and the void, as Tam had taught him, and found inner calm. But nothing outside of him changed. Slowly he opened the door and went in. Everything was as he remembered it in the room that seemed burned out of the living rock. Tall arched windows led onto an unrailed balcony, and beyond it the layered clouds streamed like a river in flood. The black metal lamps, their flames too bright to look at, gleamed, black, yet somehow as bright as silver. The fire roared but gave no heat in the fearsome fireplace, each stone still vaguely like a face in torment. All was the same, but one thing was different. On the polished tabletop stood three small figures, the rough, featureless shapes of men, as if the sculptor had been hasty with his clay. Beside one stood a wolf, its clear detail emphasized by the crudeness of the man-shape, and another clutched a tiny dagger, a point of red on the hilt glittering in the light. The last held a sword. The hair stirring on the back of his neck, he moved close enough to see the hair in an exquisite detail on that small blade. His head jerked up in panic, and he stared directly into the lone mirror. His reflection was still a blur, but not so misty as before. He could almost make out his own features. If he imagined he was squinting, he could nearly tell who it was.
"You've hidden from me too long."
He whirled from the table, breath rasping his throat. A moment before he had been alone, but now Baalzamon stood before the windows. When he spoke, caverns of flame replaced his eyes and mouth.
"Too long, but not much longer."
"I deny you," Rand said hoarsely. "I deny that you hold any power over me. I deny that you are."
Baalzamon laughed, a rich sound rolling from fire.
"Do you think it is that easy? But then you always did. Each time we have stood like this, you have thought you could defy me."
"What do you mean, each time? I deny you."
"You always do, in the beginning.
This contest between us has taken place countless times before. Each time your face is different, and your name, but each time it is you."
"I deny you."
It was a desperate whisper.
"Each time you throw your puny strength against me, and each time, in the end, you know which of us is the master. Age after age you kneel to me, or die wishing you still had strength to kneel. Poor fool. You can never win against me."
"Liar!"
he shouted.
"Father of lies! Father of fools, if you can't do better than that! Men found you in the last age, in the age of legends, and bound you back where you belong."
Baalzamon laughed again, peal after mocking peal, until Rand wanted to cover his ears to shut it out. He forced his hands to stay at his sides. Void or no, they were trembling when the laughter finally stopped.
"You worm! You know nothing at all. As ignorant as a beetle under a rock and as easily crushed. This struggle has gone on since the moment of creation. Always men think it a new war, but it is just the same war discovered anew. Only now change blows in the winds of time. Change. This time there will be no drifting back. Those proud Aes Sedai who think to stand you up against me, I will dress them in chains and send them running naked to do my bidding, or stuff their souls into the pit of doom to scream for eternity. All but those who already serve me. They will stand but a step beneath me. You can choose to stand with them, with the world groveling at your feet. I offer it one more time. One last time. You can stand above them, above every power and dominion but mine. There have been times when you made that choice, times when you lived long enough to know your power."
"Deny him."
Rand grabbed hold to what he could deny.
"No, Aes Sedai serve you. Another lie."
"Is that what they told you? 2,000 years ago I took my Trollocs across the world, and even among Aes Sedai I found those who knew despair, who knew the world could not stand before Shaitan. For 2,000 years the Black Adja has dwelt among the others unseen in the shadows, perhaps even those who claimed to help you."
Rand shook his head, trying to shake away the doubts that came welling up in him. All the doubts he had had about Moraine, about what the Aes Sedai wanted with him, about what she planned for him.
"What do you want from me?" he cried. "Deny him. Light, help me deny him."
"Kneel!"
Baalzamon pointed to the floor at his feet.
"Kneel and acknowledge me your master. In the end, you will. You will be my creature, or you will die.
The last word echoed through the room, reverberating back on itself, doubling and redoubling, till Rand threw up his arms as if to shield his head from a blow. Staggering back until he thumped into the table, he shouted, trying to drown the sound in his ears.
No!
As he cried out, he spun, sweeping the figures to the floor. Something stabbed his hand, but he ignored it, stomping the clay to shapeless smears underfoot. But when his shout failed, the echo was still there and growing stronger. Die, 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 die. The sound pulled on him like a whirlpool, drawing him in, ripping the void in his mind to shreds. The light dimmed, and his vision narrowed down to a tunnel with Baalzamon standing tall in the last spot of brightness at the end, dwindling until it was the size of his hand, a fingernail, nothing. Around and around the echo whirled him, down into blackness and death. The thump as he hit the floor woke him, still struggling to swim up out of that darkness. The room was dark, but not so dark as that. Frantically, he tried to center on the flame, to shovel fear into it, but the calm of the void eluded him. Tremors ran down his arms and legs, but he held the image of the single flame until the blood stopped pounding in his ears. Matt was tossing and twisting on his bed, groaning in his sleep.
Deny you! Deny you! Deny you!
It faded off into unintelligible moans. Rand reached out to shake him awake, and at first touch, Matt sat up with a strangled grunt. For a minute, Matt stared around wildly, then drew a long, shuddering breath and dropped his head into his hands. Abruptly, he twisted around, digging under his pillow, then sank back, clutching the ruby-hilted dagger in both hands on his chest. He turned his head to look at Rand, his face hidden in shadow.
"He's back, Rand."
"I know." Matt nodded.
"There were these three figures."
"I saw them, too."
"He knows who I am, Rand. I picked up the one with the dagger, and he said, 'So that's who you are.' And when I looked again, the figure had my face. My face, Rand. It looked like flesh. It felt like flesh. Light helped me, I could feel my own hand gripping me, like I was the figure."
Rand was silent for a moment.
"You have to keep denying him, Matt." "I did, and he laughed. He kept talking about some eternal war, and saying we'd met like that 1,000 times before, and... Light, Rand, the Dark One knows me."
"He said the same thing to me." "I don't think he does," he added slowly. "I don't think he knows which of us...
Which of us what?"
As he levered himself up, pain stabbed his hand. Making his way to the table, he managed to get the candle lit after three tries, then spread his hand open in the light. Driven into his palm was a thick splinter of dark wood, smooth and polished on one side. He stared at it, not breathing. Abruptly, he was panting, plucking at the splinter, fumbling with haste.
"What's the matter?" Matt asked. "Nothing."
Finally, he had it, and a sharp yank pulled it free. With a grunt of disgust, he dropped it, but the grunt froze in his throat. As soon as the splinter left his fingers, it vanished. The wound was still there in his hand, though, bleeding. There was water in the stoneware pitcher. He filled the basin, his hands shaking so that he splashed water onto the table. Hurriedly, he washed his hands, kneading his palm till his thumb brought out more blood, then washed them again. The thought of the smallest sliver remaining in his flesh terrified him.
"Light," Matt said. "He made me feel dirty, too."
But he still lay where he was, holding the dagger in both hands.
"Yes," Rand said. "Dirty."
He fumbled a towel from the stack beside the basin. There was a knock at the door, and he jumped. It came again.
"Yes,"
he said. Moraine put her head into the room.
"You are awake already. Good. Dress quickly and come down. We must be away before first light." "Now?"
Matt groaned.
"We haven't had an hour's sleep yet."
"An hour," she said. "You have had four. Now hurry. We do not have much time." Rand shared a confused look with Matt. He could remember every second of the dream clearly. It had begun as soon as he closed his eyes and lasted only minutes. Something in that exchange must have communicated itself to Moraine. She gave them a penetrating look and came all the way in.
What has happened? The dreams?
He knows who I am, Matt said. The Dark One knows my face.
Rand held up his hand wordlessly, palm toward her. Even in the shadowed light from the one candle, the blood was plain. The Aes Sedai stepped forward and grasped his upheld hand, her thumb across his palm covering the wound. Cold pierced him to the bone, so chill that his fingers cramped, and he had to fight to keep them open. When she took her fingers away, the chill went too. He turned his hand then, stunned, scrubbed the thin smear of blood away. The wound was gone. Slowly he raised his eyes to meet those of the Aes Sedai.
Hurry, she said softly. Time grows very short.
He knew she was not speaking of the time for their leaving any more. Chapter 44 The Dark Along the Ways. In the darkness just before dawn, Rand followed Moraine down to the back hall where Master Gil and the others were waiting, Nynaeve and Egwene as anxiously as loyal, Perrin almost as calm as the warder. Matt stayed on Rand's heels as if he were afraid to be even a little alone now, even as much as a few feet away. The cook and her helpers straightened, staring as the party passed silently into the kitchen, already brightly lit and hot with preparations for breakfast. It was not usual for patrons of the inn to be up and out at that hour. At Master Gil's soothing words, the cook gave a loud sniff and slapped her dough down hard. They were all back to tending griddles and kneading dough before Rand reached the stableyard door. Outside, the night was still pitch black. To Rand, everyone else was only a darker shadow at best. He followed the innkeeper and land blindly, blind in truth, hoping Master Gil's knowledge of his own stableyard and the warder's instincts would get them across it without someone breaking a leg. Loyal stumbled more than once.
I don't see why we can't have just one light, the Ogier grumbled. We don't go running about in the dark in the steading. I'm an Ogier, not a cat.
Rand had a sudden image of Loyal's tufted ears, twitching irritably. The stable loomed up suddenly out of the night, a threatening mass until the stable door creaked open, spilling a narrow stream of light into the yard. The innkeeper only opened it wide enough for them to go in one at a time, and hastily pulled it to behind Perrin, almost clipping his heels. Rand blinked in the sudden light inside. The stablemen were not surprised by their appearance, as the cook had been. Their horses were saddled and waiting. Mondarb stood arrogantly, ignoring everyone but Lan, but Aldeeb stretched her nose out to nuzzle Moraine's hand. There was a pack horse, bulky with wicker panniers, and a huge animal with hairy fetlocks, taller even than the warder's stallion, for Loyal. It looked big enough to pull a loaded haywain by itself, but compared with the Ogier, it seemed a pony. Loyal eyed the big horse and muttered doubtfully,
"My own feet have always been good enough."
Master Gil motioned to Rand. The innkeeper was lending him a bay almost the color of his own hair, tall and deep of chest, but with none of the fire in his step that Cloud had had, Rand was glad to see. Master Gil said his name was Red. Egwene went straight to Bella and Nynaeve to her long-legged mare. Matt brought his dun-colored horse over by Rand.
"Parents making me nervous," he muttered.
Rand looked at him sharply.
"Well, he's acting strange. Don't you see it, too? I swear it's not my imagination, or...
Rand nodded, not the dagger taking hold of him again, thank the light. "He is Matt. But just be easy. Moraine knows about... whatever it is. Perrin's fine." He wished he could believe it, but it seemed to satisfy Matt at least a little.
"Of course," Matt said hastily, still watching Perrin out of the corner of his eye. "I never said he wasn't."
Master Gil conferred with the head groom. That leathery-skinned man, with a face like one of the horses, knuckled his forehead and hurried to the back of the stable. The innkeeper turned to Moraine with a satisfied smile on his round face.
"Remy says the way is clear, Aes Sedai."
The rear wall of the stable appeared solid and stout, lined with heavy racks of tools. Raimi and another stableman cleared away the hayforks, rakes, and shovels, then reached behind the racks to manipulate hidden latches. Abruptly, a section of the wall swung inward on hinges so well concealed that Rand was not sure he could find them, even with the disguised door standing open. Light from the stable illuminated a brick wall only a few feet away.
"It's only a narrow run between buildings," the innkeeper said, "but nobody outside this stable knows there's a way into it from here. White cloaks or white cockades, there'll not be any watchers to see where you come out."
The Aes Sedai nodded. "Remember, good innkeeper, if you fear any trouble from this, write to Shariam Sedai of the Blue Adja in Tarvalin, and she will help. I fear my sisters and I have a good deal to put right already for those who have helped me." Master Gil laughed, not the laugh of a worried man.
"Why, Aes Sedai, you've already given me the only inn in all of Camelin without rats. What more could I ask for? I can double my custom on that alone."
His grin faded into seriousness.
"Whatever you're up to, the Queen holds with Tarvalin, and I hold with the Queen. So I wish you well. The light illumine you, Aes Sedai. The light illumine you all."
"The light illumine you also, Master Gil," Moraine replied with a bow of her head. "But if the light is to shine on any of us, we must be quick." Briskly, she turned to Loyal. "Are you ready?" With a wary look at its teeth, the Ogier took the reins of the big horse. Trying to keep that mouth the length of the reins from his hand, he led the animal to the opening at the back of the stable. Raimi hopped from one foot to the other, impatient to close it again. For a moment, Loyal paused with his head cocked, as if feeling a breeze on his cheek.
"This way," he said,
and turned down the narrow alley. Moraine followed right behind Loyal's horse, then Rand and Matt. Rand had the first turn leading the pack horse. Nynaeve and Egwene made the middle of the column, with Perrin behind them, and Lan bringing up the rear. The hidden door swung hastily shut as soon as Mondarb stepped into the dirt alleyway. The snick-snick of latches locking, shutting them off, sounded unnaturally loud to Rand. The run, as Master Gil had called it, was very narrow indeed, and even darker than the stable yard, if that was possible. Tall, blank walls of brick or wood lined both sides, with only a narrow strip of black sky overhead. The big woven baskets slung on the pack horse scraped the buildings on both sides. The panniers bulged with supplies for the journey, most of it clay jars filled with oil. A bundle of poles was lashed lengthwise down the horse's back, and each had a lantern swinging at the end of it. In the ways, Loyal said, it was darker than the darkest night. The partially filled lanterns sloshed with the motion of the horse and clinked against each other with a tinny sound. It was not a very loud noise, but in the hour before dawn, Camelin was quiet, silent. The dull metallic clinks sounded as if they could be heard a mile away. When the run led out into a street, Loyal chose his direction without a pause. He seemed to know exactly where he was going now, as if the route he needed to follow was becoming clearer. Rand did not understand how the Ogier could find the waygate, and Loyal had not been able to explain very well. "He just knew," he said. "He could feel it." Loyal claimed it was like trying to explain how to breathe. As they hurried up the street, Rand looked back toward the corner where the Queen's blessing lay. According to Lamgwen, there were still half a dozen white cloaks not far down from that corner. Their interest was all on the inn, but a noise would surely bring them. No one was out at this hour for a reputable reason. The horseshoes seemed to ring on the paving stones like bells. The lanterns clattered as if the pack horse were shaking them deliberately. Not until they had rounded another corner did he stop looking over his shoulder. He heard relieved sighs from the other Emmonsfielders as they came round it, too. Loyal appeared to be following the most direct path to the waygate, wherever it took them. Sometimes they trotted down broad avenues, empty save for an occasional dog skulking in the dark. Sometimes they hurried along alleys, as narrow as the stable run, where things squished under an unwary step. Nynaeve complained softly about the resulting smells, but no one slowed down. The darkness began to lessen, fading toward a dark gray. Faint glimmers of dawn pearled the sky above the eastern rooftops. A few people appeared on the streets, bundled up against the early cold, heads down while they yet dreamed of their beds. Most paid no mind to anyone else. Only a handful even glanced at the line of people and horses, with Loyal at its head, and only one of those truly saw them. That one man flicked his eyes at them, just like the others, already sinking back into his own thoughts, when he suddenly stumbled and almost fell, turning himself back around to stare. There was only light enough to see shapes, but that was too much. Seen at a distance by himself, the Ogier could have passed for a tall man leading an ordinary horse, or for an ordinary man leading an undersized horse. With the others in line behind him to give perspective, Loyal looked exactly as big as he was, half again as tall as any man should be. The man took one look and, with a strangled cry, set off running, his cloak flapping behind him. There would be more people in the streets soon, very soon. Rand eyed a woman hurrying past on the other side of the street, seeing nothing but the pavement in front of her feet. More people to notice soon. The eastern sky grew lighter.
There, Loyal announced at last. It is under there.
It was a shop, he pointed to, still closed for the night. The tables out front were bare, the awnings over them rolled up tight, the door stoutly shuttered. The windows above, where the shopkeeper lived, were still dark.
Under, Matt exclaimed incredulously. How in the light can we...
Moraine raised a hand that cut him off and motioned for them to follow her into the alley beside the shop. Horses and people together, they crowded the opening between the two buildings. Shaded by the walls, it was darker there than on the street, near to full night again.
There must be a cellar door, Moraine muttered. Ah, yes.
Abruptly, light blossomed. A coolly glowing ball the size of a man's fist hung suspended over the Aes Sedai's palm, moving as she moved her hand. Rand thought that it was a measure of what they had been through, that everyone seemed to take it as a matter of course. She put it close to the door she had found, slanted almost flat to the ground. With a hasp held by thick bolts and an iron lock bigger than Rand's hand, and thick with old rust. Loyal gave the lock a tug.
I can pull it off, hasp and all, but it will make enough noise to wake the whole neighborhood.
Let us not damage the goodman's property if we can avoid it.
Moraine studied the lock intently for a moment. Suddenly she gave the rusty iron a tap with her staff, and the lock fell open neatly. Hastily, Loyal undid the lock and swung the doors up, propping them back. Moraine went down the ramp thus revealed, lighting her way with the glowing ball. Aldeeb stepped delicately behind her.
"Light the lanterns and come down," she called softly. "There is plenty of room. Hurry! It will be light out soon."
Rand hurriedly untied the pulled lanterns off the pack horse, but even before the first was lit he realized he could see Matt's features. People would be filling the streets in minutes, and the shopkeeper would be coming down to open up for business, all wondering why the alleyway was crammed full of horses. Matt muttered something nervously about taking horses indoors, but Rand was glad to lead his down the ramp. Matt followed, grumbling, but no less quickly. Rand's lantern swung on the end of its pole, bumping the ceiling if he was not careful, and neither Red nor the pack horse liked the ramp. Then he was down and getting out of Matt's way. Moraine let her floating light die, but as the rest joined them, the added lanterns lit the open space. The cellar was as long and as wide as the building above, much of the space taken up by brick columns, flaring up from narrow bases to five times as big at the ceiling. The place seemed made up from a series of arches. There was plenty of room, but Rand still felt crowded. Loyal's head brushed the ceiling. As the rusted lock had foretold, the cellar had not been used in a long time. The floor was bare except for a few broken barrels filled with odds and ends, and a thick layer of dust. Motes, stirred up by so many feet, sparkled in the lantern light. Lan was last in, and as soon as he had Mondarb down the ramp, he climbed back to pull the door shut.
"Blood and ashes," Matt growled. "Why would they build one of these gates in a place like this?"
"It was not always like this," Loyal said.
His rumbling voice echoed in the cavernous space.
"Not always. No."
The Ogier was angry, Rand realized with a shock.
"Once trees stood here. Every kind of tree that would grow in this place. Every kind of tree that Ogier could coax to grow here. The great trees, 100 spans high. shade of branch and cool breezes to catch the smell of leaf and flower and hold the memory of the peace of the steading. All that murdered for this.
His fist thumped a column. The column seemed to shake under that blow. Rand was certain he heard bricks crack. Waterfalls of dry mortar slid down the column.
What is already woven cannot be undone, Moraine said gently. It will not make the trees grow again for you to bring the building down on our heads.
Loyal's drooping eyebrows made him look more abashed than a human face could have managed.
With your help, Loyal, perhaps we can keep the groves that still stand from falling under the shadow. You have brought us to what we seek.
As she moved to one of the walls, Rand realized that that wall was different from the others. They were ordinary brick. This was intricately worked stone, fanciful swirls of leaves and vines, pale even under its coat of dust. The brick and mortar were old, but something about the stone said it had stood there long, long before the brick was fired. Later builders, themselves centuries gone, had incorporated what already stood, and still later men had made it part of a cellar. One part of the carved stone wall, right in the center, was more elaborate than the rest. As well done as the rest was, it appeared a crude copy in comparison. Worked in hard stone, those leaves seemed soft, caught in one frozen moment as a gentle summer breeze stirred them. For all of that, they had the feel of age, as much greater than the rest of the stone, as the rest was older than the brick. That old and more. Loyal looked at them, as if he would rather be anywhere else but there, even out in the streets with another mob.
Avendisora, Moraine murmured, resting her hand on a trefoil leaf in the stonework.
Rand scanned the carving. That was the only leaf of its kind he could find.
The leaf of the tree of life is the key, the Aes Sedai said,
and the leaf came away in her hand. Rand blinked. From behind him he heard gasps. That leaf had seemed no less a part of the wall than any other. Just as simply, the Aes Sedai set it against the pattern a handspan lower. The three-pointed leaf fit there as if the space had been intended for it, and once more it was part of the whole. As soon as it was in place, the entire nature of the central stonework changed. He was sure now that he could see the leaves ruffled by some unfelt breeze. He almost thought they were verdant under the dust, a tapestry of thick spring greenery there in the lantern-lit cellar. Almost imperceptibly at first, a split opened in the middle of the ancient carving, widening as the two halves slowly swung into the cellar until they stood straight out. The backs of the gates were worked as the fronts, the same profusion of vines and leaves, almost alive. Behind, or should have been dirt or the cellar of the next building, a dull reflective shimmering faintly caught their images.
"I have heard," Loyal said, half mourning, half fearful, "that once the way gates shone like mirrors. Once who entered the ways walked through the sun and the sky. Once."
"We have no time for waiting," Moraine said.
Lan went past her, leading Mondarb, pulled lantern in hand. His shadowy reflection approached him, leading a shadowy horse. Man and reflection seemed to step into each other at the shimmering surface, and both were gone. For a moment the black stallion balked, an apparently continuous rein connecting him to the dim shape of his own image. The rein tightened, and the warhorse, too, vanished. For a minute everyone in the cellar stood staring at the way gate.
"Hurry," Moraine urged. "I must be the last through. We cannot leave this open for anyone to find by chance. Hurry!"
With a heavy sigh, Loyal strode into the shimmer. Tossing its head, his big horse tried to hold back from the surface and was hauled through. They were gone as completely as the water in Mondarb. Hesitantly, Rand poked his lantern at the way gate. The lantern sank into its reflection, the two merging until both were gone. He made himself keep on walking forward, watching the pole disappear into itself inch by inch. And then he was stepping into it himself, entering the gate. His mouth fell open. Something icy slid along his skin as if he were passing through a wall of cold water. Time stretched out. The cold enveloped one hair at a time, shivered over his clothes, thread by thread. Abruptly, the chill burst like a bubble, and he paused to catch his breath. He was inside the ways. Just ahead, Lan and Loyal waited patiently by their horses. All around them was blackness that seemed to stretch on forever. Their lanterns made a small pool of light around them, too small, as if something pressed back the light or ate it. Of a sudden anxious, he jerked at his reins. Red and the packhorse came leaping through, nearly knocking him down. Stumbling, he caught himself and hurried to the warder and the ogier, pulling the nervous horses behind him. The animals whickered softly. Even Mondub appeared to take some comfort from the presence of other horses.
"Go easy when you pass through a way gate, Rand," Loyal cautioned. "Things are different inside the ways than out. Look."
He looked back the way the ogier pointed, thinking to see the same dull shimmer. Instead, he could see into the cellar, as if through a large piece of smoked glass set in the blackness. Disturbingly, the darkness around the window into the cellar gave a sense of depth, as though the opening stood alone with nothing around or behind it but the dark. He said as much with a shaky laugh, but Loyal took him seriously.
"You could walk all the way around it, and you would not see a thing from the other side. I would not advise it, though. The books aren't very clear about what lies behind the way gates. I think you could become lost there, and never find your way out."
Rand shook his head and tried to concentrate on the way gate itself, rather than what lay behind it. But that was just as disturbing in its own fashion. If there had been anything to look at in the darkness besides the way gate, he would have looked at it. In the cellar, through the smoky dimness, Moraine and the others were plain enough, but they moved as if in a dream. Every blink of an eye seemed a deliberate, exaggerated gesture. Matt was making his way to the way gate, as though walking through clear jelly, his legs seeming to swim forward.
"The wheel turns faster in the ways," Loyal explained.
He looked at the darkness surrounding them, and his head sunk in between his shoulders.
"None alive no more than fragments. I fear what I don't know about the ways, Rand."
"The Dark One," Lan said, "cannot be defeated without chancing risks. But we are alive at this moment, and before us is the hope of remaining alive. Do not surrender before you are beaten, Ogier."
"You would not speak so confidently if you had ever been in the ways."
The normal distant thunder of Loyal's voice was muted. He stared at the blackness as if he saw things there.
"I never have before, either. But I've seen Ogier who have been through a way gate and come out again. You would not speak so if you had."
Matt stepped through the gate and regained normal speed. For an instant he stared at the seemingly endless darkness, then came running to join them, his lantern bobbing on its pole, his horse leaping behind him, almost sending him sprawling. One by one the others passed through, Perrin and Egwene and Nynaeve, each pausing in shocked silence before hurrying to join the rest. Each lantern enlarged the pool of light, but not as much as it should have. It was as if the dark became denser the more light there was, thickening as it fought against being diminished. That was not a line of reasoning Rand wanted to follow. It was bad enough just being there without giving the darkness a will of its own. Everyone seemed to feel the oppressiveness, though. There were no wry comments from Matt here, and Egwene looked as if she wished she could rethink her decision to come. They all silently watched the way gate, that last window into the world they knew. Finally, only Moraine was left in the cellar, dimly lit by the lantern she had taken. The Aes Sedai still moved in that dreamlike way. Her hand crept as it found the leaf of the Avendisora. It was located lower in the stonework on this side, Rand saw, just where she had placed it on the other. Plucking it free, she put it back in the original position. He wondered suddenly if the leaf on the other side had moved back too. The Aes Sedai came through, leading Ul Deeb as the stone gates slowly, slowly began closing behind her. She came to join them, the light of her lantern leaving the gates before they were shut. Blackness swallowed the narrowing view of the cellar. In the constrained light of their lanterns, blackness surrounded them totally. Suddenly it seemed as if the lanterns were the only light left in the world. Rand realized that he was jammed shoulder to shoulder in between Perrin and Egwene. Egwene gave him a wide-eyed look and pressed closer, and Perrin made no move to give him room. There was something comforting about touching another human being when the whole world had just been swallowed up by dark. Even the horses seemed to feel the ways, pushing them into a tighter and tighter knot. Outwardly unconcerned, Moraine and Lan swung into their saddles, and the Aes Sedai leaned forward, arms resting on her carved staff across the high pommel of her saddle.
"We must be on our way, Loyal."
Loyal gave a start and nodded vigorously.
"Yes, yes, Aes Sedai, you are right. Not a minute longer than need be."
He pointed to a broad strip of white running under their feet, and Rand stepped away from it hastily. All the Two Rivers folk did. Rand thought the floor had been smooth once, but the smoothness was pitted now, as if the stone had the pox. The white line was broken in several places.
"This leads from the Waygate to the first guiding. From there..."
Loyal looked around anxiously, then scrambled onto his horse with none of the reluctance he had shown earlier. The horse wore the biggest saddle the head groom had been able to find, but Loyal filled it from pommel to cantle. His feet hung down on either side, almost to the animal's knees.
"Not a minute longer than need be," he muttered.
Reluctantly, the others mounted.
Moraine and Lan rode on either side of the Ogier, following the white line through the dark. Everyone else crowded in behind as close as they could get, the lanterns bobbing over their heads. The lanterns should have given enough light to fill a house, but 10 feet away from them it stopped. The blackness stopped it, as if it had struck a wall. The creak of saddles and click of horseshoes on stone seemed to travel only to the edge of light. Rand's hand kept drifting to his sword. It was not that he thought there was anything out there against which he could use the sword to defend himself. It did not seem as if there was anywhere for something to be. The bubble of light around them could as well have been a cave surrounded by stone, completely surrounded, with no way out. The horses might have been walking a treadmill for the change around them. He gripped the hilt as if the pressure of his hand there could press away the stone he felt weighing down on him. Touching the sword, he could remember Tam's teaching. For a little while, he could find the calm of the void. But the weight always returned, compressing the void until it was only a cavern inside his mind, and he had to start over again, touching Tam's sword to remember. It was a relief when something did change, even if it was only a tall slab of stone standing on end, that appeared out of the dark before them, the broad white line stopping at its base. Sinuous curves of metal inlaid the wide surface, graceful lines that vaguely reminded Rand of vines and leaves. Discolored pox marked stone and metal alike.
"The guiding,"
Loyal said, and leaned out of his saddle to frown at the cursive metal inlays.
"Ogier script," Moraine said, "but so broken I can barely make out what it says."
"I hardly can either," Loyal said, "but enough to know we go this way."
He turned his horse aside from the guiding. The edges of their light caught other stoneworks, what appeared to be stone-walled bridges, arcing off into the darkness, and gently sloping ramps, without railings of any kind, leading up and down. Between the bridges and the ramps ran a chest-high balustrade, however, as though falling was a danger there at any rate. Plain white stone made the balustrade, and simple curves and rounds fitted together in complex patterns. Something about all of it seemed almost familiar to Rand, but he knew it had to be his imagination groping for anything familiar where everything was strange. At the foot of one of the bridges, Loyal paused to read the single line on the narrow column stone there. Nodding, he rode up onto the bridge.
"This is the first bridge of our path," he said over his shoulder.
Rand wondered what held the bridge up. The horse's hooves made a gritty sound as if bits of stone flaked off at every step. Everything he could see was covered with shallow holes, some tiny pinpricks, others shallow, rough-edged craters astride across, as if there had been a rain of acid or the stone was rotting. The guard wall showed cracks and holes, too. In places it was gone altogether for as much as a span. For all he knew, the bridge could be solid stone all the way to the center of the earth, but what he saw made him hope it would stand long enough for them to reach the other end. Whatever that is. The bridge did end, eventually, in a place that looked no different from its beginning. All Rand could see was what their little pool of light touched, but he had the impression that it was a large space, like a flat-topped hill, with bridges and ramps leaving all around it. An island, Loyal called it.
There was another script covered guiding. Rand placed it in the middle of the island, with no way of knowing if he was right or not. Loyal read, then took them up one of the ramps, curving up and up. After an interminable climb, curving continuously, the ramp led off onto another island, just like the one where it had begun. Rand tried to imagine the curve of the ramp and gave up.
This island can't be right on top of the other one. It can't be.
Loyal consulted yet another slab filled with Ogier script, found another signpost column, led them onto another bridge. Rand no longer had any idea in what direction they were traveling. In their huddle of light in the dark, one bridge was exactly like another, except that some had breaks in the guard walls and some did not. Only the degree of damage to the guidings gave any difference to the islands. Rand lost track of time. He was not even sure how many bridges they had crossed or how many ramps they had traveled. The warder must have had a clock in his head, though. Just when Rand felt the first stir of hunger, Lan announced quietly that it was midday and dismounted to parcel out bread and cheese and dried meat from the packhorse. Perrin was leading the animal by that time. They were on an island, and Loyal was busily deciphering the directions on the guiding. Matt started to climb down from his saddle, but Moraine said,
"Time is too valuable in the ways to waste. For us, much too valuable. We will stop when it is time to sleep."
Lan was already back on Mondarb. Rand's appetite slipped at the thought of sleeping in the ways. It was always night there, but not the kind of night for sleeping. He ate while he rode, though, like everyone else. It was an awkward affair, trying to juggle his food, the lantern pole, and his reins, but for all of his imagined lack of appetite, he licked the last crumbs of bread and cheese off his hands when he was done, and thought fondly of more. He even began to think the ways were not so bad. Not nearly as bad as Loyal made out. They might have the heavy feel of the hour before a storm, but nothing changed. Nothing happened. The ways were almost boring. Then the silence was broken by a startled grunt from Loyal. Rand stood in his stirrups to peer past the Ogier, and swallowed hard at what he saw. They were in the middle of a bridge, and only a few feet ahead of Loyal, the bridge ended in a jagged gap. Chapter 45. What Follows in Shadow. The light of their lanterns stretched just far enough to touch the other side, thrusting out of the dark like a giant's broken teeth. Loyal's horse stamped a hoof nervously, and a loose stone fell away into the dead black below. If there was any sound of it striking bottom, Rand never heard it. He edged Red closer to the gap. As far down as he could thrust his lantern on its pole, there was nothing. Blackness below as blackness above, shearing off the light. If there was a bottom, it could be 1,000 feet below. Or never. But on the other side, he could see what was under the bridge, holding it up. Nothing. Less than a span in thickness, and absolutely nothing underneath. Abruptly, the stone under his feet seemed as thin as paper, and the endless drop over the edge pulled at him. The lantern and pole seemed suddenly heavy enough to pull him right out of the saddle. Head spinning, he backed the bay away from the abyss as cautiously as he had approached.
"Is it to this you've brought us, Aes Sedai?"
Nynaeve said.
"All this just to find out we have to go back to Camelon after all?"
"We do not have to go back," Moraine said. "Not all the way to Camelon. There are many paths along the ways to any place. We need only go back far enough for Loyal to find another path that will lead to Faldara."
"Loyal?"
"Loyal."
The Ogier pulled himself away from staring at the gap with a visible effort.
"What? Oh, yes, yes, Aes Sedai. I can find another path. I had..."
His eyes drifted back to the chasm, and his ears twitched.
"I had not dreamed the decay had gone so far. If the bridges themselves are breaking, it may be that I cannot find the path you want. It may be that I cannot find a path back, either. The bridges could be falling behind us even now."
"There has to be a way," Perrin said, his voice flat. His eyes seemed to gather the light, to glow golden.
"A wolf at bay," Rand thought, startled. "That's what he looks like."
It will be as the wheel weaves, Moraine said. But I do not believe the decay is as fast as you fear. Look at the stone loyal. Even I can tell that this is an old break.
Yes, Loyal said slowly. Yes, Aes Sedai, I can see it. There is no rain or wind here, but that stone has been in the air for 10 years at least.
He nodded with a relieved grin, so happy with the discovery that for a moment he seemed to forget his fear. Then he looked around and shrugged uncomfortably.
I could find other paths more easily than Muffled Dadaranel. Tarvalen, for instance, or Steading Shangtai. It's only 3 bridges to Steading Shangtai from the last island. I suppose the elders want to talk to me by this time.
Faldara, Loyal, Moraine said firmly. The eye of the world lies beyond Faldara, and we must reach the eye.
Faldara, the Ogier agreed reluctantly.
Back at the island, Loyal pored over the script-covered slab intently, drooping eyebrows drawn down as he muttered half to himself. Soon he was talking completely to himself, for he dropped into the Ogier language. That inflected tongue sounded like deep-voiced birds singing. It seemed odd to Rand that a people so big had such a musical language. Finally, the Ogier nodded. As he led them to the chosen bridge, he turned to peer forlornly at the signpost beside another.
3 crossings to Steading Shangtai.
He sighed, but he took them on past without stopping and turned onto the 3rd bridge beyond. He looked back regretfully as they started across, though the bridge to his home was hidden in the dark. Rand took the bay up beside the Ogier.
When this is over, Loyal, you show me your steading and I'll show you Emmons Field. No ways, though. We'll walk or ride, even if it takes all summer.
You believe it will ever be over, Rand?
He frowned at the Ogier.
You said it would take 2 days to reach Faldara.
Not the ways, Rand. All the rest.
Loyal looked over his shoulder at the Aes Sedai, talking softly with Lan as they rode side by side.
What makes you believe it will ever be over?
The bridges and ramps led up and down and across. Sometimes a white line ran off into the dark from the guiding, just like the line they had followed from the waygate in Camelin. Rand saw that he was not the only one who eyed those lines curiously, and a little wistfully. Nynaeve, Perrin, Matt, and even Egwene left the lines reluctantly. There was a waygate at the other end of each of them, a gate back into the world, where there was sky and sun and wind. Even the wind would have been welcome. Leave them they did, under the Aes Sedai's sharp eye. But Rand was not the only one to look back even after dark swallowed island and guiding and line. Rand was yawning by the time Moraine announced that they would stop for the night on one of the islands. Matt looked at the blackness all around them and snickered loudly, but he got down as quickly as anyone else. Lan and the boys unsaddled and hobbled the horses while Nynaeve and Egwene set up a small oil stove to make tea. Looking like the base of a lantern, it was what Lan said warders used in the Blight, where the wood could be dangerous to burn. The warder produced tripod legs from the baskets they took off the packhorse, so the lantern poles could be set in a circle around their campsite. Loyal examined the guiding for a moment, then dropped down cross-legged and rubbed a hand across the dusty, pockmarked stone.
Once things grew on the islands, he said sadly. All the books tell of it. There was green grass to sleep on, soft as any feather bed, fruit trees to spice the food you'd brought with an apple or a pear or a bell fruit, sweet and crisp and juicy, whatever the time of year outside.
Nothing to hunt, Perrin growled, then looked surprised that he had spoken. Egwene handed Loyal a cup of tea. He held it without drinking, staring at it as if he could find the fruit trees in its depths.
"Aren't you going to set wards?" Nynaeve asked Moraine. "Surely there must be worse than rats in this. Even if I haven't seen any, I can still feel."
The Aes Sedai rubbed her fingers against her palms distastefully.
"You feel the taint, the corruption of the power that made the ways. I will not use the one power in the ways unless I must. The taint is so strong that whatever I'd try to do would surely be corrupted."
That made everyone as silent as Loyal.
Lan settled down to his meal methodically, as if he were stoking a fire, the food less important than fueling his body. Moraine ate well, too, and as tidily as if they were not squatting on bare stone, quite literally in the middle of nowhere. But Rand only picked at his food. The tiny flame of the oil stove gave just enough heat to boil water, but he crouched toward it as if he could soak up warmth. His shoulders brushed Matt and Perrin. They all made a tight circle around the stove. Matt held his bread and meat and cheese forgotten in his hands, and Perrin set his tin plate down after only a few bites. The mood became more and more glum, and everyone looked down, avoiding the dark around them. Moraine studied them as she ate. Finally, she put her plate aside and patted her lips with a napkin.
"I can tell you one cheerful thing. I do not think Tom Marilyn is dead."
Rand looked at her sharply.
"But the Fade?"
"Matt told me what happened in Whitebridge," the Aes Sedai said. "People there mentioned a gleeman, but they said nothing of him dying. They would have, I think, if a gleeman had been killed. Whitebridge is not so big as for a gleeman to be a small thing. And Tom is a part of the pattern that weaves itself around you three. Too important a part, I believe, to be cut off yet."
Too important? Rand thought. How could Moraine know? Min? She saw something about Tom?
She saw a great deal, Moraine said wryly. About all of you. I wish I could understand half of what she saw, but even she does not. Old barriers fail, but whether what Min does is old or new, she sees true. Your fates are bound together. Tom Marilyn's, too.
Nynaeve gave a dismissive sniff and poured herself another cup of tea.
I don't see how she saw anything about any of us, Matt said with a grin. As I remember it, she spent most of her time looking at Rand.
Egwene raised an eyebrow.
Oh, you didn't tell me that, Moraine Sedai.
Rand glanced at her. She was not looking at him, but her tone had been too carefully neutral.
I talked to her once, he said. She dresses like a boy and her hair is as short as mine. You talked to her once.
Egwene nodded slowly, still not looking at him. She raised her cup to her lips.
Min was just somebody who worked at the inn in Bearlawn, Perrin said. Not like Aram.
Egwene choked on her tea.
Too hot, she muttered.
Who's Aram? Rand asked.
Perrin smiled, much like Matt's smile in the old days when he was up to mischief, and hid behind his cup.
One of the traveling people,
Egwene said casually, but red spots bloomed in her cheeks.
One of the traveling people, Perrin said blandly. He dances, like a bird.
Wasn't that what you said, Egwene?
It was like flying with a bird.
Egwene set her cup down deliberately.
I don't know if anyone else is tired, but I'm going to sleep.
As she rolled herself up in her blankets, Perrin reached over to nudge Rand in the ribs and winked. Rand found himself grinning back.
Burn me if I didn't come out best for a change. I wish I knew as much about women as Perrin. Maybe, Rand, Matt said slyly, you ought to tell Egwene about Farmer Grinwell's daughter, Els.
Egwene lifted her head to stare first at Matt, then at him. He hastily got up to fetch his own blankets.
Sleep sounds good to me right now.
All the Emmonsfield people began seeking their blankets then, and Loyal too. Moraine sat sipping her tea, and Lan. The warder did not look as if he ever intended to sleep, or needed to. Even rolled up for sleep, no one wanted to get very far from the others. They made a small circle of blanket-covered mounds right around the stove, almost touching one another.
Rand, Matt whispered. Was there anything between you and Min? I barely got a look at her. She was pretty, but she must be nearly as old as Nynaeve.
What about this Els? Perrin added from the other side of him. She pretty?
Blood and ashes, he mumbled. Can I even talk to a girl? You two are as bad as Egwene. As the wisdom would say, Matt chided mockingly, watch your tongue. Well, if you won't talk about it, I'm going to get some sleep.
Good,
Rand grumbled. That's the first decent thing you've said. Sleep was not easily come by, though. The stone was hard, however Rand lay, and he could feel the pits through his blanket. There was no way to imagine he was anywhere but in the ways, made by the men who had broken the world, tainted by the Dark One. He kept picturing the broken bridge and the nothing under it. When he turned one way, he found Matt looking at him, looking through him, really. Mocking was forgotten when the dark around them was remembered. He rolled the other way, and Perrin had his eyes open, too. Perrin's face was less afraid than Matt's, but he had his hands on his chest, tapping his thumbs together worriedly. Moraine made a circuit of them, kneeling by each person's head and bending down to speak softly. Rand could not hear what she said to Perrin, but it made his thumbs stop. When she bent over Rand, her face almost touching his, she said in a low, comforting voice, "Even here, your destiny protects you. Not even the Dark One can change the pattern completely. You are safe from him, so long as I am close. Your dreams are safe. For a time yet, they are safe." As she passed from him to Matt, he wondered if she thought it was that simple, that she could tell him he was safe and he would believe it. But somehow he did feel safe, safer at least. Thinking that, he drifted into sleep and did not dream. Lan woke them. Rand wondered if the warder had slept. He did not look tired, not even as tired as those who had laid some hours on the hard stone. Moraine allowed enough time to make tea, but only one cup apiece. They ate breakfast in the saddle, Loyal and the warder leading. It was the same meal as the others, bread and meat and cheese. Rand thought it would be easy to get tired of bread and meat and cheese. Not long after the last crumb was licked off a finger, Lan said quietly, "Someone is following us, or something." They were in the middle of a bridge, both ends of it hidden. Matt jerked an arrow from his quiver, and before anyone could stop him, loosed it in the dark behind them.
"I knew I shouldn't have done this," Loyal muttered. "Never deal with an Aes Sedai except in a steading."
Lan pushed the bow down before Matt could knock another.
"Stop that, you village idiot. There's no way to tell who it is."
"That's not the only place they're safe," the Ogier went on.
"What else would be in a place like this besides something evil?" Matt demanded.
"That's what the elders say, and I should have listened to them."
"We are, for one," the warder said dryly.
"Maybe it's another traveler," Egwene said hopefully. "An Ogier, perhaps."
"Ogier have more sense than to use the ways," Loyal growled. "All but Loyal, who has no sense at all. Elder Haman always said it, and it's true."
"What do you feel, Lan?" Moraine asked. "Is it something that serves the Dark One?" The warder shook his head slowly. "I don't know," he said, as if that surprised him. "I cannot tell. Perhaps it's the ways and the taint. It all feels wrong. But whoever it is, or whatever, he's not trying to catch us. He almost caught up at the last island and scampered back across the bridge so as not to. If I fall behind, I might surprise him, though, and see who or what he is."
"If you fall behind, warder," Loyal said firmly, "you'll spend the rest of your life in the ways. Even if you can read Ogier, I have never heard or read of a human who could find his path off the first island, lacking an Ogier guide. Can you read Ogier?"
Lan shook his head again, and Moraine said, "So long as he does not trouble us, we will not trouble him. We have no time. No time." As they rode off the bridge onto the next island, Loyal said,
"If I remember the last guiding correctly, there is a path from here that leads toward Tarvalon. Half a day's journey at most. Not quite as long as it will take us to reach Mothel Dadaranel. I'm sure that—"
He cut off as the light of their lanterns reached the guiding. Near the top of the slab, deeply chiseled lines, sharp and angular, made wounds in the stone. Suddenly Lan's alertness was no longer hidden. He remained easily erect in his saddle, but Rand had the sudden impression that the warder could feel everything around him, even feel the rest of them breathing. Lan began circling his stallion around the guiding, spiraling outward. He rode as if he were ready to be attacked or to attack himself.
"This explains much," Moraine said softly, "and it makes me afraid. So much. I should have guessed. The taint, the decay, I should have guessed."
"Guessed what?"
Nynaeve demanded, just as Loyal asked.
"What is it? Who did this? I've never seen or heard of anything like it."
The Aes Sedai faced them calmly.
"Trollocs."
She ignored their frightened gasps.
"Or fades. Those are Trolloc ruins. The Trollocs have discovered how to enter the ways. That must be how they got to the two rivers undiscovered. Through the waygate at Monetherin. There is at least one waygate in the Blight."
She glanced toward land before continuing. The warder was far enough away that only the faint light of his lantern could be seen.
"Monetherin was destroyed, but almost nothing can destroy a waygate. That is how the Fades could gather a small army around Camlann without raising an alarm in every nation between the Blight and Andor."
Pausing, she touched her lips thoughtfully.
"But they cannot know all the paths yet. Else they would have been pouring into Camlann through the gate we used." "Yes."
Rand shivered. Walking through the waygate to find Trollocs waiting in the dark, hundreds of them, perhaps thousands, twisted giants with half-animal faces, snarling as they leaped forward in the blackness to kill. Or worse. "They don't use the ways easily," Lan called. His lantern was no more than 20 spans off, but the light of it was only a dim, fuzzy ball that seemed very distant to those around the guiding. Moraine led the way to him. Rand wished his stomach were empty when he saw what the warder had found. At the foot of one of the bridges, the frozen shapes of Trollocs reared, caught flailing about them with hooked axes and scythe-like swords. Gray and pitted like the stone, the huge bodies were half-sunken into the swollen, bubbled surface. Some of the bubbles had burst, revealing more snouted faces, forever snarling with fear. Rand heard someone retching behind him, and swallowed hard to keep from joining whoever it was. Even for Trollocs, it had been a horrible way to die. A few feet beyond the Trollocs, the bridge ended. The signpost lay shattered into a thousand shards. Loyal got down from his horse gingerly, eyeing the Trollocs as if he thought they might come back to life. He examined the remains of the signpost hurriedly, picking out the metal script that had been inlaid in the stone, then scrambled back into his saddle.
"This was the first bridge of the path from here to Tarvalen," he said.
Matt was scrubbing the back of his hand across his mouth, with his head turned away from the Trollocs. Egwene hid her face in her hands. Rand moved his horse close to Bella and touched her shoulder. She twisted around and clutched him, shuddering. He wanted to shudder too. Her holding him was the only thing that kept him from it.
"As well, we are not going to Tarvalen yet," Moraine said.
Nynaeve rounded on the Aes Sedai.
"How can you take it so calmly? The same could happen to us."
"Perhaps," Moraine said sincerely, and Nynaeve ground her teeth so hard Rand could hear them grate. "It is more likely, though," Moraine went on, unruffled, "that the men, the Aes Sedai, who made the ways, protected them, building in traps for creatures of the Dark One. It is something they must have feared then, before the half-men and Trollocs had been driven into the Blight. In any case, we cannot tarry here, and whatever way we choose, back or ahead, is as likely to have a trap as any other.
Loyal, do you know the next bridge?"
"Yes, yes. They did not ruin that part of the guiding, thank the light."
For the first time, Loyal seemed as eager to go on as Moraine did.
He had his big horse moving before he finished speaking.
Egwene clung to Rand's arm for two more bridges. He regretted it when she finally let go with a murmured apology and a forced laugh, and not just because it had felt good having her hold on to him that way. It was easier to be brave, he discovered, when someone needed your protection. Moraine might not have believed a trap could be set for them, but for all the haste she spoke of, she made them travel more slowly than before, pausing before letting them onto any bridge or off one onto an island. She would step all deep forward, feeling the air in front of her with an outstretched hand, and not even Loyal or Lan was allowed to go ahead until she gave permission. Rand had to trust her judgment about traps, but he peered into the darkness around them as if he could actually see anything more than 10 feet away, and strained his ears listening. If Trollocs could use the ways, then whatever was following them could be another creature of the Dark One. Or more than one. Lan had said he could not tell in the ways. But as they crossed bridge after bridge, ate a midday meal riding, and crossed still more bridges, all he could hear were their own saddles creaking, and the horses' hooves, and sometimes one of the others coughing or muttering to himself. Later there was a distant wind, too, off in the black somewhere. He could not say in which direction. At first, he thought it was his imagination, but with time he became sure.
"It'll be good to feel the wind again, even if it's cold."
Suddenly he blinked.
"Loyal, didn't you say there isn't any wind in the ways?"
Loyal pulled his horse up just short of the next island and cocked his head to listen. Slowly his face paled and he licked his lips.
"Machin Shin,"
he whispered hoarsely.
"The black wind. The light illumine and protect us. It's the black wind."
"How many more bridges?" Moraine asked sharply.
"Loyal, how many more bridges?"
"Two, I think two."
"Quickly then," she said, trotting Aldeeb onto the island. "Find it quickly."
Loyal talked to himself, or to anyone who was listening, while he read the guiding.
"They came out mad, screaming about Machin Shin. Light help us. Even those Aes Sedai could heal, they—"
He scanned the stone hastily and galloped toward the chosen bridge with a shouted,
"This way!"
This time Moraine did not wait to check. She urged them on to a gallop, the bridge trembling beneath the horses, lanterns swinging wildly overhead. Loyal ran his eyes over the next guiding and wheeled his big mount around like a racer almost before it had stopped. The sound of the wind became louder. Rand could hear it even over the pounding of hooves on stone. Behind them, and gusting closer. They did not bother with the last guiding. As soon as the light of the lanterns caught the white line running from it, they swung in that direction, still galloping. The island vanished behind, and there was only the pitted gray stone underfoot and the white line. Rand was breathing so hard he was no longer sure if he could hear the wind. Out of the darkness the gates appeared, vine-covered and standing alone in the black, like a tiny piece of wall in the night. Moraine leaned out of her saddle, reaching toward the carvings, and suddenly pulled back.
"The Avendasura leaf is not here," she said. "The key is gone."
"Light!" Matt shouted. "Bloody light!"
Loya threw back his head and gave a mournful cry, like a howl of dying. Egwene touched Rand's arm, but she only looked at him. He put his hand on top of hers, hoping he did not look more frightened than she did. He felt it. Back toward the guiding, the wind howled. He almost thought he could hear voices in it. Voices screaming vileness that even half understood brought bile up in his throat. Moraine raised her staff, and flame lanced from the end of it. It was not the pure white flame that Rand remembered from Emmon's Field and the battle before Shadar Logoth. Sickly yellow streaked through the fire, and slow-drifting flecks of black like soot. A thin, acrid smoke drifted from the flame, setting Loyal coughing and the horses dancing nervously. But Moraine thrust it at the gates. The smoke rasped Rand's throat and burned his nose. Stone melted like butter, leaf and vine withering in the flame and vanishing. The Aes Sedai moved the fire as fast as she could, but cutting an opening big enough for everyone to get through was no quick task. To Rand, it seemed as if the line of melted stone crept along its arc at a snail's pace. His cloak stirred as if caught by the edge of a breeze, and his heart froze.
"I can feel it," Matt said, his voice quavering.
"Light, I can bloody feel it!"
The flame winked out, and Moraine lowered her staff.
"Done," she said. "Half done."
A thin line ran across the stone carving. Rand thought he could see light, dim but still light, through the crack. But despite the cutting, the two big curved wedges of stone still stood there, half an arc out of each door. The opening would be big enough for everyone to ride through, though Loyal might have to lie flat on his horse's back. Once the two wedges of stone were gone, it would be big enough. He wondered how much each weighed. 1,000 pounds? More?
"Maybe if we all get down and push. Maybe we can push one of them over before the wind gets here."
A gust tugged at his cloak. He tried not to listen to what the voices cried. As Moraine stepped back, Mondarb leaped forward, straight toward the gates, Lan crouched in the saddle. At the last instant, the warhorse twisted to catch the stone with his shoulder, just as he had been taught to catch other horses in battle. With a crash, the stone toppled outward, and the warder and his horse were carried by their momentum through the smoky shimmer of a waygate. The light that came through was mid-morning light, pale and thin, but it seemed to Rand as if the noonday summer sun blazed in his face. On the far side of the gate, Lan and Mondarb slowed to a crawl, stumbling in slow motion as the warder reined back around toward the gate. Rand did not wait. Pushing Bella's head toward the opening, he slapped the shaggy mare hard on the croup. Egwene had just enough time to throw a startled look over her shoulder at him before Bella carried her out of the ways.
All of you, out! Moraine directed. Quickly! Go!
As she spoke, the Aes Sedai thrust her staff out at arm's length, pointed back toward the guiding. Something leaped from the end of the staff, like liquid light rendered to a syrup of fire. A blazing spear of white and red and yellow, streaking into the black, exploding, coruscating like shattered diamonds. The wind shrieked in agony. It screamed in rage. The thousand murmurs that hid in the wind roared like thunder. Roars of madness, half-heard voices cackling and howling promises that twisted Rand's stomach, as much by the pleasure in them as by what he almost understood them to say. He booted Red forward, crowding into the opening, squeezing after the others, all forcing through the smoky glistening at once. The icy chill ran through him again, the peculiar sensation of being slowly lowered face down into a winter pond, the cold water crawling across his skin by infinitesimal increments. Just as before, it seemed to go on forever, while his mind raced, wondering if the wind could catch them, while they were held like that. As suddenly as a pricked bubble, the chill vanished, and he was outside. His horse, for one abrupt instant, moving twice as fast as he had been, stumbled and almost pitched him over his head. He threw both arms around the bay's neck and hung on for dear life. While he got back into the saddle, Red shook himself, then trotted over to join the others as calmly as if nothing at all odd had happened. It was cold, not the chill of the waygate, but welcome natural winter cold that slowly, steadily burrowed into flesh. He pulled his cloak around him, his eyes in the dull glimmer of the waygate. Beside him, Lan leaned forward in his saddle, one hand on his sword. Man and horse were tensed, as if on the point of charging back through if Moraine did not appear. The waygate stood in a jumble of stones at the base of a hill, hidden by bushes except where the falling pieces had broken down the bare, brown branches. Alongside the carvings and the remains of the gates, the brush looked more lifeless than the stone. Slowly, the murky surface bulged like some strange, long bubble rising to the surface of a pond. Moraine's back broke through the bubble. Inchmeal, the Aes Sedai, and her dim reflection backed out of each other. She still held her staff out in front of her, and she kept it there as she drew Aldeeb out of the waygate after her, the white mare dancing with fear, eyes rolling. Still watching the waygate, Moraine backed away. The waygate darkened. The hazy shimmer became murkier, sinking through gray to charcoal, then to black as deep as the heart of the ways. As if from a great distance the wind howled at them, hidden voices filled with an unquenchable thirst for living things, filled with a hunger for pain, filled with frustration. The voices seemed to whisper in Rand's ears, right at the brink of understanding, and within it. Flesh so fine to tear, to gash the skin, skin to strip, to plate, so nice to plate the strips, so nice. So red the drops that fall, blood so red, so sweet. Sweet screams, pretty screams, singing screams. Scream your song, sing your screams. The whispers drifted, the blackness lessened, faded, and the waygate was again a murky shimmer seen through an arch of carved stone. Rand let out a long, shuddering breath. He was not the only one. He heard other relieved exhalations. Egwene had Bella alongside Nynaeve's horse, and the two women had their arms around each other, their heads on each other's shoulders. Even Lan seemed relieved, though the hard planes of his face showed nothing. It was more in the way he sat Mondarb, a loosening of the shoulders as he looked at Moraine, a tilt of the head.
"It could not pass," Moraine said. "I thought it could not. I hoped it could not."
"Fah!"
She tossed her staff on the ground and scrubbed her hand on her cloak. Char, thick and black, marked the staff for over half its length.
"The taint corrupts everything in that place."
"What was that?" Nynaeve demanded. "What was it?"
Loyal appeared confused.
"Why, Machin Shin, of course. The black wind that steals souls."
"But what is it?" Nynaeve persisted. "Even with a trollic you can look at it. Touch it if you have a strong stomach. But that—"
She gave a convulsive shiver.
"Something left from the time of madness, perhaps," Moraine replied. "Or even from the war of the shadow, the war of power. Something hiding in the ways so long it can no longer get out. No one, not even among the Ogier, knows how far the ways run or how deep. It could even be something of the ways themselves. As Loyal said, the ways are living things— and all living things have parasites. Perhaps even a creature of the corruption itself, something born of the decay, something that hates life and light.
Stop! Egwene cried. I don't want to hear any more. I could hear it, saying...
She cut off, shivering.
There is worse to be faced yet,
Moraine said softly. Rand did not think she meant it to be heard. The Aes Sedai climbed into her saddle wearily and settled there with a grateful sigh.
This is dangerous, she said, looking at the broken gates.
Her charred staff received only a glance.
The thing cannot get out, but anyone could wander in. Agomar must send men to wall it up once we reach Faldara.
She pointed to the north, to towers in the misty distance above the barren treetops. Chapter 46 Faldara. The country around the waygate was rolling, forested hills, but aside from the gates themselves, there was no sign of any Ogier grove. Most of the trees were gray skeletons clawing at the sky. Fewer evergreens than Rand was used to dotted the forest, and of them, dead, brown needles and leaves covered many. Loyal made no comment beyond a sad shaking of his head.
As dead as the blasted lands, Nynaeve said, frowning.
Egwene pulled her cloak around her and shivered.
At least we're out, Perrin said, and Matt added, Out where?
Shinar, Lan told them. We're in the borderlands.
In his hard voice was a note that said home, almost. Rand gathered his cloak against the cold.
The borderlands.
Then the blight was close by.
The blight.
The eye of the world. And what they had come to do.
We are close to Faldara, Moraine said. Only a few miles.
Across the treetops, towers rose to the north and east of them, dark against the morning sky. Between the hills and the woods, the towers often vanished as they rode, only to reappear again when they topped a particularly tall rise. Rand noticed trees split open as if struck by lightning.
The cold, Lan answered when he asked. Sometimes the winter is so cold here, the sap freezes and trees burst. There are nights when you can hear them cracking like fireworks, and the air is so sharp you think that might shatter too. There are more than usual this winter past.
Rand shook his head.
Trees bursting?
And that was during an ordinary winter? What must this winter have been like? Surely like nothing he could imagine.
Who says winter's past? Matt said, his teeth chattering.
Why, this, a fine spring, sheepherder, Lan said. A fine spring to be alive. But if you want warm, well, it will be warm in the blight.
Softly, Matt muttered.
Blood and ashes. Blood and bloody ashes.
Rand barely heard him, but it sounded heartfelt. They began to pass farms, but though it was the hour for midday meals to be cooking, no smoke rose from the high stone chimneys. The fields were empty of men and livestock both, though sometimes a plow or a wagon stood abandoned, as if the owner meant to be back any minute. At one farm close by the road, a lone chicken scratched in the yard. One barn door swung freely with the wind. The other had broken off the bottom hinge and hung at an angle. The tall house, odd to Rand's Two Rivers eyes, with its sharp-peaked roof of big wooden shingles running almost to the ground, was still and silent. No dog came out to bark at them. A scythe lay in the middle of the barnyard. Buckets were overturned in a heap beside the well. Moraine frowned at the farmhouse as they rode by. She lifted Aldib's reins, and the white mare quickened her pace. The Emmons fielders were clustered with Loyal, a little behind the Aes Sedai and the warder. Rand shook his head. He could not imagine anything growing there, ever. But then he could not really imagine the ways, either. Even now that he was past them, he could not.
I don't think she expected this, Nynaeve said quietly, with a gesture that took in all the empty farms they had seen.
Where did they all go?
Egwene said.
Why? They can't have been gone very long. What makes you say that?
Matt asked.
From the look of the barn door, they could have been gone all winter.
Nynaeve and Egwene both looked at him as if he were slow-witted.
The curtains in the windows,
Egwene said patiently.
They look too light for winter curtains, even here. As cold as it is here, no woman would have had those up more than a week or two, maybe less.
The wisdom nodded.
Curtains,
Perrin chuckled. He immediately wiped the smile off his face when the two women raised their eyebrows at him.
Oh, I agree with you. There wasn't enough rust on that scythe for any more than a week in the open. You should have seen that, Matt, even if you missed the curtains.
Rand glanced sideways at Perrin, trying not to stare. His eyes were sharper than Perrin's, or had been, when they used to hunt rabbits together. But he had not been able to see that scythe blade well enough to make out any rust.
I really don't care where they went, Matt grumbled. I just want to find some place with a fire. Soon.
But why did they go? Rand said under his breath. The blight was not far off here. The blight, where all the fades and trollocs were, those not down in Andor chasing them. The blight, where they were going.
He raised his voice enough to be heard by those close to him. Nynaeve, maybe you and Egwene don't have to go to the Eye with us.
The two women looked at him as if he were speaking gibberish, but with the blight so close, he had to make one last try.
Maybe it's enough for you to be close. Moraine didn't say you have to go. Or you, Loyal. You could stay at Faldara, until we come back. Or you could start for Tarvalen. Maybe there'll be a merchant train, or I'll bet Moraine would even hire a coach. We will meet in Tarvalen when it's all over.
Tavirin.
Loyal's sigh was a rumble like thunder on the horizon.
You swirl lives around you, Randalthor. You and your friends. Your fate chooses ours.
The Ogier shrugged, and suddenly a broad grin split his face.
Besides, it will be something to meet the Green Man. Elder Haman always talks about his meeting with the Green Man, and so does my father, and most of the elders.
So many, Perrin said. The stories say the Green Man is hard to find, and no one can find him twice.
Not twice, no,
Loyal agreed.
But then, I have never met him, and neither have you. He doesn't seem to avoid Ogier quite the way he does humans. He knows so much about trees, even the tree songs.
Rand said,
The point I was trying to make is...
The wisdom cut him off.
She says Egwene and I are part of the pattern, too. All woven in with you three. If she is to be believed, there's something about the way that piece of the pattern is woven that might stop the Dark One. And I am afraid I do believe her. Too much has happened not to. But if Egwene and I go away, what might we change about the pattern? I was only trying to...
Again Nynaeve interrupted sharply.
I know what you are trying to do.
She looked at him until he shifted uneasily in his saddle, then her face softened.
I know what you are trying to do, Rand. I have little liking for any Aes Sedai, and this one least of all, I think. I have less for going into the Blight, but least of all is the liking I have for the Father of Lies. If you boys, you men, can do what has to be done when you'd rather do almost anything else, why do you think I will do less? Or Egwene?
She did not appear to expect an answer. Gathering her reins, she frowned toward the Aes Sedai up ahead.
I wonder if we're going to reach this Faldara place soon, or does she mean us to spend the night out in this?
As she trotted toward Moraine, Matt said,
She called us men. It seems like only yesterday she was saying we shouldn't be off leading strings, and now she calls us men. You still shouldn't be off your mother's apron strings, Egwene said.
But Rand did not think her heart was in it.
She moved Bella close to his bay and lowered her voice so none of the others could hear, although Matt at least tried. I only danced with Aram, Rand, she said softly, not looking at him. You wouldn't hold it against me. Dancing with somebody I will never see again, would you?
No, he told her.
But what had made her bring it up now?
Of course not. But suddenly he remembered something Min had said in Baerlon, what seemed 100 years ago.
She's not for you, nor you for her. At least, not in the way you both want.
The town of Faldara was built on hills higher than the surrounding country. It was nowhere near as big as Camelin, but the wall around it was as high as Camelin's. For a full mile outside that wall, in every direction, the ground was clear of anything taller than grass, and that cut low. Nothing could come close without being seen from one of the many tall towers topped by wooden hoardings. Where the walls of Camelin had a beauty about them, the builders of Faldara seemed not to have cared if anyone found their wall beautiful. The gray stone was grimly implacable, proclaiming that it existed for one purpose alone: to hold. Pennants atop the hoardings whipped in the wind, making the stooping Black Hawk of Shinar seem to fly all along the walls. Lan tossed back the hood of his cloak and, despite the cold, motioned for the others to do the same. Moraine had already lowered hers. "It's the law in Shinar," the warder said. "In all the borderlands. No one may hide his face inside a town's walls."
"Are they all that good-looking?" Matt laughed.
"A half-man can't hide with his face exposed," the warder said in a flat voice. Rand's grin slid off his face. Hastily, Matt pushed back his hood. The gates stood open, tall and covered with dark iron, but a dozen armored men stood guard in golden-yellow surcoats, bearing the Black Hawk. The hilts of long swords on their backs peaked over their shoulders, and broadsword or mace or axe hung at every waist. Their horses were tethered nearby, made grotesque by the steel bardings covering their chests and necks and heads, with lances to stirrup, all ready to ride at an instant. The guards made no move to stop Lan and Moraine and the others. Indeed, they waved and called out happily.
"Daishan!"
one cried, shaking steel-gauntleted fists over his head as they rode past.
"Daishan!"
A number of others shouted,
"Glory to the builders!"
and
"Kisarai Tiwansho!"
Loya looked surprised, then a broad smile split his face, and he waved to the guards. One man ran alongside Lan's horse a little way, unhampered by the armor he wore.
"Will the golden crane fly again, Daishan?"
"Peace, Ragan," was all the warder said, and the man fell away. He returned the guard's waves, but his face was suddenly even more grim. As they rode through stone-paved streets, crowded with people and wagons, Rand frowned worriedly. Faldara was bulging at the seams, but the people were neither the eager crowds of Camelin, enjoying the grandeur of the city, even as they squabbled, nor the milling throngs of Berlon. Packed cheek by jowl, these folk watched their party ride by with leaden eyes and faces blanked of emotion. Carts and wagons jammed every alleyway and half the streets, piled high with jumbled household furnishings, and carved chests packed so tight that clothes spilled. On top sat the children. Adults kept the younglings up where they could be seen and did not let them stray even to play. The children were even more silent than their elders, their eyes bigger, more haunting in their stares. The nooks and crannies between the wagons were filled with shaggy cattle and black-spotted pigs in makeshift pens. Crates of chickens and ducks and geese fitfully made up for the silence of the people. He knew now where all the farmers had gone. Lan led the way to the fortress in the middle of the town, a massive stone pile atop the highest hill. A dry moat, deep and wide, its bottom a forest of sharp steel spikes, razor-edged and as tall as a man, surrounded the towered walls of the keep. A place for a last defense if the rest of the town fell. From one of the gate towers, an armored man called down,
"Welcome, Daishan!"
Another shouted to the inside of the fortress,
"The Golden Crane! The Golden Crane!"
Their hooves drummed on the heavy timbers of the lower drawbridge as they crossed the moat and rode under the sharp points of the stout portcullis. Once through the gates, Lan swung down out of his saddle to lead Mandarb, signaling the others to dismount. The first courtyard was a huge square paved with big stone blocks and surrounded by towers and battlements, as fierce as those on the outside of the walls. As big as it was, the courtyard appeared just as crowded as the streets, and as much in turmoil, though there was an order to the crowding here. Everywhere were armored men and armored horses. At half a dozen smithies around the court, hammers clanged and big bellows, tugged by two leather-aproned men apiece, made the forge fires roar. A steady stream of boys ran with new-made horseshoes for the farriers. Fletchers sat making arrows, and every time a basket was filled, it was whisked away and replaced with an empty one. Liveried grooms appeared on the run, eager and smiling in black and gold. Rand hastily untied his belongings from behind the saddle and gave the bay up to one of the grooms as a man in plate and mail and leather bowed formally. He wore a bright yellow cloak edged in red over his armor with the black hawk on the breast and a yellow surcoat bearing a gray owl. He wore no helmet and was bareheaded, truly, for his hair had all been shaved except for a topknot tied with a leather cord.
"It has been long, Moraine," I said. "It is good to see you, Daishan. Very good."
He bowed again to Loyal and murmured,
"Glory to the builders. Kisarai Tiwansho."
"I am unworthy,"
Loyal replied formally,
"and the work small. Tsingu Ma Choba."
"You honor us, builder," the man said. "Kisarai Tiwansho."
He turned back to Lan.
"Word was sent to Lord Agomar, Daishan, as soon as you were seen coming. He is waiting for you. This way, please."
As they followed him into the fortress, along drafty stone corridors hung with colorful tapestries and long silk screens of hunting scenes and battles, he continued,
"I am glad the call reached you, Daishan. Will you raise the golden crane banner once more?"
The halls were stark except for the wall hangings, and even they used the fewest figures made with the fewest lines necessary to convey meaning, though in bright colors.
"Are things really as bad as they appear, Ingtar?" Lan asked quietly.
Rand wondered if his own ears were twitching like Loyal's. The man's topknot swayed as he shook his head, but he hesitated before putting on a grin.
"Things are never as bad as they appear, Daishan. A little worse than usual this year, that is all. The raids continued through the winter, even in the hardest of it. But the raiding was no worse than anywhere else along the border. They still come in the night, but what else can be expected in the spring, if this can be called spring? Scouts return from the Blight, those who do come back, with news of Trolloc camps. Always fresh news of more camps. But we will meet them at Tarwin's Gap, Daishan, and turn them back as we always have."
"Of course," Lan said, but he did not sound certain. Ingtar's grin slipped, but came back immediately. Silently he showed them into Lord Agomar's study, then claimed the press of his duties and left. It was a room as purpose-made as all the rest of the fortress, with arrow slits in the outer wall and a heavy bar for the thick door, which had its own arrow piercings and was bound by iron straps. Only one tapestry hung here. It covered an entire wall and showed men, armored like the men of Faldara, fighting Murdral and Trollocs in a mountain pass. A table, one chest, and a few chairs were the only furnishings, except for two racks on the wall, and they caught Rand's eye as much as the tapestry. One held a two-handed sword, taller than a man, a more ordinary broadsword, and below them a studded mace and a long, kite-shaped shield bearing three foxes. From the other hung a suit of armor, complete and arranged as one would wear it. Crested helmet with its barred face guard over a double mail camail. Mail hauberk, split for riding, and leather undercoat, polished from wear. Breastplate, steel gauntlets, knee and elbow cops, and half-plate for shoulders and arms and legs. Even here in the heart of the keep, weapons and armor seemed ready to be donned at any moment. Like the furniture, they were simply and severely decorated with gold. Agomar himself rose at their entrance and came around the table, littered with maps and sheafs of paper and pens standing in inkpots. He seemed at first glance too peaceful for the room in his blue velvet coat with its tall, wide collar and soft leather boots, but a second look showed Rand differently. Like all the fighting men he had seen, Agomar's head was shaved except for a topknot, and that pure white. His face was as hard as Lan's, the only lines creases at the corners of his eyes, and those eyes like brown stone, though they bore a smile now.
"Peace, but it is good to see you, Daishan," the Lord of Faldara said. "And you, Moraine Aes Sedai, perhaps even more. Your presence warms me, Aes Sedai."
"Ninte kalichnia, no domashita, Agulmar Daishan,"
Moraine replied formally, but with a note in her voice that said they were old friends.
"Your welcome warms me, Lord Agulmar."
"Kodome kalichnia, gani Aes Sedai, hei." "Here is always a welcome for Aes Sedai."
He turned to Loyal.
"You are far from the steading, Ogier.
but you honor Faldara. Always glory to the builders. Qui sarai Tiwancho Hei?
I am unworthy,
Loyal said, bowing.
It is you who do me honor.
He glanced at the stark stone walls and seemed to struggle with himself. Rand was glad the Ogier managed to refrain from adding further comment. Servants in black and gold appeared on silent, soft-slippered feet. Some brought folded cloths, damp and hot, on silver trays for wiping the dust from their faces and hands. Others bore mulled wine and silver bowls of dried plums and apricots. Lord Agomar gave orders for rooms to be prepared and baths.
"A long journey from Tarvalen," he said. "You must be tired."
"A short journey, the path we came," Lan told him. "But more tiring than the long way." Agomar looked puzzled when the warder said no more, but he merely said,
"A few days' rest will put you all in fine fettle."
"I ask one night's shelter, Lord Agomar," Moraine said, "for ourselves and our horses, and fresh supplies in the morning if you can spare them. We must leave you early, I am afraid."
Agomar frowned.
"But I thought..." "Moraine," said I have no right to ask it of you, but you would be worth 1,000 lances in Tarwin's Gap. And you, Daishan, 1,000 men will come when they hear the golden crane flies once more."
"The 7 towers are broken," Lan said harshly, "and Mulkir is dead. The few of her people left scattered across the face of the earth. I am a warder, Agomar, sworn to the flame of Tarvalen, and I am bound into the blight."
"Of course, Dasha. Lan, of course. But surely a few days' delay, a few weeks at most, will make no difference. You are needed. You and Moraine Sedai."
Moraine took a silver goblet from one of the servants.
"Ingtar seems to believe you'll defeat this threat as you have defeated many others across the years."
"Aye, Sedai," Agomar said wryly. "If Ingtar had to ride alone to Tarwin's Gap, he would ride the whole way, proclaiming that the Trollocs would be turned back once more. He has almost pride enough to believe he could do it alone."
"He is not as confident as you think this time, Agomar." The warder held a cup, but he did not drink.
"How bad is it?"
Agomar hesitated, pulling a map from the tangle on the table. He stared unseeing at the map for a moment, then tossed it back.
"When we ride to the Gap," he said quietly, "the people will be sent south to Falmoran. Perhaps the capital can hold. Peace, it must. Something must hold."
"That bad," Lan said, and Agomar nodded wearily. Rand exchanged worried looks with Matt and Perrin. It was easy to believe the Trollocs gathering in the Blight were after him, after them. Agomar went on grimly.
"Kandor, Arafel, Saldea. The Trollocs raided them all straight through the winter. Nothing like that has happened since the Trolloc Wars. The raids have never been so fierce or so large, or pressed home so hard. Every king and council is sure a great thrust is coming out of the Blight, and every one of the Borderlands believes it is coming at them. None of their scouts and none of the warders report Trolloc massing above their borders, as we have here. But they believe, and each is afraid to send fighting men elsewhere. People whisper that the world is ending, that the Dark One is loose again. Shinar will ride to Tarwin's Gap alone, and we will be outnumbered at least 10 to 1. At least. It may be the last ingathering of the lances. Lan, no. Daishan, for you are a diademed battle lord of Mulkir, whatever you say. Daishan, the golden crane banner in the van would put heart into the men who know they are riding north to die. The word will spread like wildfire, and though their kings have told them to hold where they are, lances will come from Arafel and Kandor, and even from Saldea. Though they cannot come in time to stand with us in the Gap, they may save Shinar."
Lan peered into his wine. His face did not change, but wine slopped over his hand. The silver goblet crumpled in his grip. A servant took the ruined cup and wiped the warder's hand with a cloth. A second put a fresh goblet in his hand while the other was whisked away. Lan did not seem to notice.
"I cannot,"
he whispered hoarsely. When he raised his head, his blue eyes burned with a fierce light, but his voice was calm again and flat.
I am a warder, Agomar.
His sharp gaze slid across Rand and Matt and Perrin to Moraine.
At first light I ride to the Blight.
Agomar sighed heavily.
Moraine Sedai, will you not come at least? An Aes Sedai could make the difference.
I cannot, Lord Agomar.
Moraine seemed troubled.
There is indeed a battle to be fought, and it is not chance that the Trollocs gather above Shinar, but our battle, the true battle with the Dark One, will take place in the Blight, at the Eye of the World. You must fight your battle, and we ours.
You cannot be saying he is loose!
Rock-like Agomar sounded shaken, and Moraine quickly shook her head.
Not yet. If we win at the Eye of the World, perhaps not ever again.
Can you even find the Eye, Aes Sedai? If holding the Dark One depends on that, we might as well be dead. Many have tried and failed.
I can find it, Lord Agomar. Hope is not lost yet.
Agomar studied her, and then the others. He appeared puzzled by Nynaeve and Egwene. Their farm clothes contrasted sharply with Moraine's silk dress, though all were travel-stained.
They are Aes Sedai, too?
He asked doubtfully. When Moraine shook her head, he seemed even more confused. His gaze ran over the young men from Emmons Field, settling on Rand, brushing the red-repped sword at his waist.
A strange guard you take with you, Aes Sedai. Only one fighting man.
He glanced at Perrin and at the axe hanging from his belt.
Perhaps two. But both barely more than lads. Let me send men with you. 100 lances more or less will make no difference in the gap, but you will need more than one warder and 3 youths. And 2 women will not help unless they are Aiel in disguise. The Blight is worse than usual this year. It stirs.
100 lances would be too many, Lan said, and 1,000 not enough. The larger the party we take into the Blight, the more chance we will attract attention. We must reach the Eye without fighting if we can. You know the outcome is all but foretold when Trollocs force battle inside the Blight.
Agomar nodded grimly, but he refused to give up.
Fewer, then. Even 10 good men would give you a better chance of escorting Moraine Sedai and the other 2 women to the Green Man than will just these young fellows.
Rand abruptly realized the Lord of Faldara assumed it was Nynaeve and Egwene who, with Moraine, would fight against the Dark One. It was natural. That sort of struggle meant using the One Power, and that meant women.
That sort of struggle means using the power.
He tucked his thumbs behind his sword belt and gripped the buckle hard to keep his hands from shaking.
No men, Moraine said.
Agomar opened his mouth again, and she went on before he could speak.
It is the nature of the Eye and the nature of the Green Man. How many from Faldara have ever found the Green Man and the Eye?
Ever?
Agomar shrugged.
Since the War of the 100 Years, you could count them on the fingers of one hand. No more than 1 in 5 years from all the borderlands together.
No one finds the Eye of the World, Moraine said, unless the Green Man wants them to find it. Need is the key, and intention. I know where to go. I have been there before.
Rand's head whipped around in surprise. His was not the only one among the Emmonsfielders, but the Aes Sedai did not seem to notice.
But one among us seeking glory, seeking to add his name to those 4, and we may never find it, though I take us straight to the spot I remember.
You have seen the Green Man, Moraine Sedai?
The Lord of Faldara sounded impressed, but in the next breath he frowned.
But if you have already met him once...
Need is the key, Moraine said softly, and there can be no greater need than mine, than ours. And I have something those other seekers have not.
Her eyes barely stirred from Agomar's face, but Rand was sure they had drifted toward Loyal, just for an instant before the Aes Sedai pulled them back. Rand met the Ogier's eyes, and Loyal shrugged.
Tavirin,
the Ogier said softly. Agomar threw up his hands.
It will be as you say, Aes Sedai. Peace, if the real battle is to be at the Eye of the World, I am tempted to take the Black Hawk banner after you instead of to the Gap. I could cut a path for you.
That would be disaster, Lord Agomar. Both at Tarwin's Gap and at the Eye. You have your battle, and we ours.
Peace. As you say, Aes Sedai.
Having reached a decision, however much he disliked it, the shaven-headed Lord of Faldara seemed to put it out of his mind. He invited them to table with him, all the while making conversation about hawks and horses and dogs, but with never a mention of Trollocs or Tarwin's Gap or the Eye of the World. The chamber where they ate was as stark and plain as Lord Agelmar's study had been, with little more furnishing it than the table and chairs themselves, and they were severe in line and form. Beautiful, but severe. A big fireplace warmed the room, but not so much that a man called out hurriedly would be stunned by the cold outside. Liveried servants brought soup and bread and cheese, and the talk was of books and music, until Lord Agelmar realized the Emmons Field folk were not talking. Like a good host, he asked gently probing questions, designed to bring them out of their quiet. Rand soon found himself competing to tell about Emmons Field and the Two Rivers. It was an effort not to say too much. He hoped the others were guarding their tongues, Matt especially. Nynaeve alone held herself back, eating and drinking silently.
"There's a song in the Two Rivers," Matt said, "coming home from Tarwin's Gap."
He finished hesitantly, as if suddenly realizing that he was bringing up what they had been avoiding. But Agelmar handled it smoothly.
"Little wonder. Few lands have not sent men to hold back the blight over the years."
Rand looked at Matt and Perrin. Matt silently formed the word Manetherin. Agelmar whispered to one of the servants, and while others cleared the table, that man vanished and returned with a canister, and clay pipes for Lan, Loyal, and Lord Agelmar.
"Two rivers to Bach," the Lord of Faldara said as they filled their pipes. "Hard to come by here, but worth the cost."
When Loyal and the two older men were puffing contentedly, Agelmar glanced at the Ogier.
"You seem troubled, Builder. Not beset by the longing, I hope. How long have you been away from the steading?"
"It is not the longing. I have not been gone such a time as that."
Loyal shrugged, and the blue-gray streamer rising from his pipe made a spiral above the table as he gestured.
"I expected, hoped, that the grove would still be here. Some remnant of Mafal de Daranel, at least."
"Qui sera et Iwancho," Agelmar murmured. "The Trolloc Wars left nothing but memories, Loyal son of Arendt, and people to build on them. They could not duplicate the builder's work any more than I could. Those intricate curves and patterns your people create are beyond human eyes and hands to make. Perhaps we wish to avoid a poor imitation that would only have been an ever-present reminder to us of what we had lost. There is a different beauty in simplicity, in a single line placed just so, a single flower among the rocks. The harshness of the stone makes the flower more precious. We try not to dwell too much on what is gone. The strongest heart will break under that strain." "The rose petal floats on water," Lan recited softly. "The kingfisher flashes above the pond. Life and beauty swirl in the midst of death." "Yes," Agelmar said. "Yes. That one has always symbolized the whole of it to me, too."
The two men bowed their heads to one another. Poetry out of Lan? The man was like an onion. Every time Rand thought he knew something about the water, he discovered another layer underneath. Loyal nodded slowly.
"Perhaps I also dwell too much on what is gone. And yet the groves were beautiful."
But he was looking at the stark room as if seeing it anew, and suddenly finding things worth seeing. Ingtar appeared and bowed to Lord Agelmar.
"Your pardon, Lord. But you wanted to know of anything out of the ordinary, however small."
"Yes. What is it?"
"A small thing, Lord. A stranger tried to enter the town. Not of Shinar. By his accent, a Lugarder. Sometimes, at least. When the South Gate guards attempted to question him, he ran away. He was seen to enter the forest,
but only a short time later he was found scaling the wall.
A small thing.
Agomar's chair scraped across the floor as he stood.
Peace! The Tower Watch is so negligent a man can reach the walls unseen, and you call it a small thing?
He is a madman, Lord.
Awe touched Ingtar's voice.
The light shields, madman. Perhaps the light cloaked the Tower Watch's eyes and allowed him to reach the walls. Surely one poor madman can do no harm.
Has he been brought to the keep yet? Good. Bring him to me here. Now.
Ingtar bowed and left, and Agomar turned to Moraine.
Your pardon, Aes Sedai, but I must see to this. Perhaps he is only a pitiful wretch with his mind blinded by the light, but... 2 days gone. 5 of our own people were found in the night trying to saw through the hinges of a horse gate. Small, but enough to let Trollocs in.
He grimaced.
Dark friends, I suppose, though I hate to think it of any Shinaran. They were torn to pieces by the people before the guards could take them, so I'll never know. If Shinarans can be dark friends, I must be especially careful of Outlanders in these days. If you wish to withdraw, I will have you shown to your rooms.
Dark friends know neither border nor blood, Moraine said. They are found in every land, and are of none. I too am interested in seeing this man. The pattern is forming a web, Lord Agomar, but the final shape of the web is not yet set. It may yet entangle the world, or unravel and set the wheel to a new weaving. At this point, even small things can change the shape of the web. At this point, I am wary of small things out of the ordinary.
Agomar glanced at Nynaeve and Egwene.
As you wish, Aes Sedai.
Ingtar returned with 2 guards carrying long bills and escorting a man who looked like a ragbag turned inside out. Grime layered his face and matted his scraggly uncut hair and beard. He hunched into the room, sunken eyes darting this way and that. A rancid smell wafted ahead of him. Rand sat forward intently, trying to see through all the dirt.
"You've no cause to be holding me like this," the filthy man whined. "I'm only a poor destitute, abandoned by the light and seeking a place like everyone else to shelter from the shadow."
"The Borderlands are a strange place to seek," Agomar began, when Matt cut him off.
"The peddler!"
"Pardon Fane," Perrin agreed, nodding.
"The beggar,"
Rand said, suddenly hoarse. He sat back at the sudden hatred that flared in Fane's eyes.
"He's the man who was asking about us in Camelon. He has to be."
"So this concerns you after all, Moraine Sedai," Agomar said slowly.
Moraine nodded.
"I greatly fear that it does."
"I didn't want to,"
Fane began to cry. Fat tears cut runnels in the dirt on his cheeks, but they were unable to reach the bottom layer.
"He made me, him and his burning eyes."
Rand flinched. Matt had his hand under his coat, no doubt clutching the dagger from Shadar Logoth again.
"He made me his hound to hunt and follow with never a bit of rest. Only his hound, even after he threw me away."
"It does concern us all," Moraine said grimly. "Is there a place where I can talk with him alone, Lord Agomar?"
Her mouth tightened with distaste.
"And wash him first. I may need to touch him."
Agomar nodded and spoke softly to Ingtar, who bowed and disappeared through the door.
"I will not be compelled!"
The voice was Fane's, but he was no longer crying, and an arrogant snap had replaced the whine. He stood upright, not crouching at all. Throwing back his head, he shouted at the ceiling.
"Never again! I will not!"
He faced Agomar as if the men flanking him were his own bodyguard, and the Lord of Faldara his equal rather than his captor. His tone became sleek and oily.
"There is a misunderstanding here, great lord. I am sometimes taken by spells, but that will pass soon. Yes, soon I will be rid of them."
Contemptuously, he flicked his fingers against the rags he wore.
"Do not be misled by these, great lord. I have had to disguise myself against those who would have tried to stop me, and my journey has been long and hard.
but at last I have reached lands where men still know the dangers of Baalzaman, where men still fight the Dark One."
Rand stared, goggling. It was Fane's voice, but the words did not sound like the peddler at all.
"So you've come here because we fight Trollocs," Agumar said. "And you are so important that someone wants to stop you. These people say you are a peddler called Padan Fane, and that you are following them."
Fane hesitated. He glanced at Moraine and hurriedly pulled his eyes away from the Aes Sedai. His gaze ran across the Emmons fielders, then jerked back to Agumar. Rand felt the hate in that look, and the fear. When Fane spoke again, though, his voice was unruffled.
"Padan Fane is simply one of the many disguises I have been forced to wear over the years. Friends of the Dark One pursue me, for I have learned how to defeat the Shadow. I can show you how to defeat him, Great Lord."
"We do as well as men can," Agumar said dryly. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills. But we have fought the Dark One almost since the breaking of the world without peddlers to teach us how."
"Great Lord, your might is unquestioned, but can it stand against the Dark One forever? Do you not often find yourself pressed to hold? Forgive my temerity, Great Lord. He will crush you in the end as you are. I know. Believe me, I do. But I can show you how to scour the shadow from the land, Great Lord."
His tone became even more unctuous, though still haughty.
"If you but try what I advise, you will see, Great Lord. You will cleanse the land. You, Great Lord, can do it, if you direct your might in the right direction. Avoid letting Tarvalin entangle you in its snares, and you can save the world. Great Lord, you will be the man remembered through history for bringing final victory to the light."
The guards held their places, but their hands shifted on the long shafts of the bills as if they thought they might have to use them.
"He thinks a great deal of himself for a peddler," Agumar said to Lan over his shoulder. "I think Ingtar is right. He is mad."
Fane's eyes tightened angrily, but his voice remained smooth.
"Great Lord, I know my words must appear grandiose, but if you will only—"
He cut off abruptly, stepping back as Moraine rose and started slowly around the table. Only the guard's lowered bills kept Fane from backing right out of the room. Stopping behind Matt's chair, Moraine put a hand on his shoulder and bent to whisper in his ear. Whatever she said, the tension went out of his face, and he took his hand from under his coat. The Aes Sedai went on until she stood behind Agumar, confronting Fane. As she came to a halt, the peddler sank into a crouch once more.
"I hate him," he whimpered. "I want to be free of him. I want to walk in the light again."
His shoulders began to shake, and tears streamed down his face even more heavily than before.
"He made me do it."
"I am afraid he is more than a peddler, Lord Agumar," Moraine said. "Less than human, worse than vile, more dangerous than you can imagine. He can be bathed after I have spoken with him. I dare not waste a minute. Come, Lan."
Chapter 47 More Tales of the Wheel. An itchy restlessness had Rand pacing beside the dining table. 12 strides. The table was exactly 12 strides long, no matter how many times he stepped it off. Irritably, he made himself stop keeping tally.
Stupid thing to be doing. I don't care how long the bloody table is.
A few minutes later, he discovered that he was counting the number of trips he made up the table and back.
What is he saying to Moraine and Lan? Does he know why the Dark One is after us? Does he know which of us the Dark One wants?
He glanced at his friends. Perrin had crumbled a piece of bread and was idly pushing the crumbs around on the table with one finger. His yellow eyes stared unblinking at the crumbs, but they seemed to see something far off. Matt slouched in his chair, eyes half closed, and the beginnings of a grin on his face. It was a nervous grin, not amusement. Outwardly, he looked like the old Matt, but from time to time, he unconsciously touched the Shadow Logoth dagger through his coat.
What is Fane telling her? What does he know?
Loyal, at least, did not look worried. The Ogier was studying the walls. First he had stood in the middle of the room and stared, turning slowly in a circle. Now he was almost pressing his broad nose against the stone while he gently traced a particular joint with fingers thicker than most men's thumbs. Sometimes he closed his eyes as if the feeling was more important than seeing. His ears gave an occasional twitch, and he muttered to himself in Ogier, appearing to have forgotten anyone else was in the room with him. Lord Agomar stood talking quietly with Nynaeve and Egwene in front of the long fireplace at the end of the room. He was a good host, adept at making people forget their troubles. Several of his stories had Egwene in giggles. Once even Nynaeve threw back her head and roared with laughter. Rand gave a start at the unexpected sound and jumped again when Matt's chair crashed to the floor.
"Blood and ashes," Matt growled, ignoring the way Nynaeve's mouth tightened at his language. "What is taking her so long?"
He righted his chair and sat back down without looking at anyone. His hands strayed to his coat. The Lord of Fal'Dara looked at Matt disapprovingly. His gaze took in Rand and Perrin without any improvement, then turned back to the women. Rand's pacing had taken him close to them.
"My lord," Egwene was saying, as glibly as if she had been using titles all of her life. "I thought he was a warder. But you call him Daishan, and talk about a golden crane banner, and so did those other men. Sometimes you sound almost as if he's a king. I remember once Moraine called him the last Lord of the Seven Towers. Who is he?"
Nynaeve began studying her cup intently, but it was obvious to Rand that abruptly she was listening even more closely than was Egwene. Rand stopped and tried to overhear without seeming to eavesdrop.
"Lord of the Seven Towers," Agomar said with a frown. "An ancient title, Lady Egwene. Not even the High Lords of Tyr have older, though the Queen of Andor comes close."
He heaved a sigh and shook his head.
"He will not speak of it, yet the story is well known along the border. He is a king, or should have been. A Lan Mandragoran. Lord of the Seven Towers. Lord of the Lakes. Crownless King of the Malkyrie."
His shaven head lifted high, and there was a light in his eye as if he felt a father's pride. His voice grew stronger, filled with the force of his feeling. The whole room could hear without straining.
"We of Shinar call ourselves bordermen, but fewer than 50 years ago Shinar was not truly of the borderlands. North of us, and of Arafel, was Malkyr. The lances of Shinar rode north, but it was Malkyr that held back the blight. Malkyr. Peace favor her memory and light illumine her name."
"Lan is from Malkyr," the wisdom said softly, looking up.
She seemed troubled. It was not a question, but Agomar nodded.
"Yes, Lady Nynaeve. He is the son of Al-Akir Mandragoran, last crowned king of the Malkyrie. How did he become as he is? The beginning, perhaps, was Lane. On a dare, Lane Mandragoran, the king's brother, led his lances through the blight to the blasted lands, perhaps to Shael Ghul itself. Lane's wife, Brienne, made that dare for the envy that burned her heart, that Al-Akir had been raised to the throne instead of Lane. The king and Lane were as close as brothers could be, as close as twins even after the royal Al was added to Akir's name, but jealousy racked Brienne. Lane was acclaimed for his deeds, and rightfully so, but not even he could outshine Al-Akir. He was man and king, such as comes once in 100 years, if that. Peace favor him, and Eliana. Lane died in the blasted lands with most of those who followed him. Men Malkyr could ill afford to lose, and Brienne blamed the king, saying that Shael Ghul itself would have fallen if Al-Akir had led the rest of the Malkyrie north with her husband. For revenge, she plotted with Cowan Gamalan, called Cowan Fairheart, to seize the throne for her son, Isam. Now Fairheart was a hero almost as well loved as Al-Akir himself, and one of the great lords. But when the great lords had cast the rods for king,
only two separated him from Akir. And he never forgot that two men, laying a different color on the crowning stone, would have set him on the throne instead. Between them, Cowan and Brayan moved soldiers back from the Blight to seize the Seven Towers, stripping the border forts to bare garrisons. But Cowan's jealousy ran deeper. Disgust tinged Agomar's voice. Fairheart the hero, whose exploits in the Blight were sung throughout the borderlands, was a dark friend. With the border forts weakened, Trollocs poured into Malkier like a flood. King Al-Akir and Lane together might have rallied the land. They had done so before. But Lane's doom in the blasted lands had shaken the people, and the Trolloc invasion broke men's spirit and their will to resist. Too many men. Overwhelming numbers pushed the Malkiri back into the heartland. Brayan fled with her infant son Isam and was run down by Trollocs as she rode south with him. No one knows their fate of a certainty, but it can be guessed. I can find pity only for the boy. When Cowan Fairheart's treachery was revealed and he was taken by young Jaen Charin, already called Jaen Farstrider, when Fairheart was brought to the Seven Towers in chains, the great lords called for his head on a pike. But because he had been second only to Al-Akir and Lane in the hearts of the people, the king faced him in single combat and slew him. Al-Akir wept when he killed Cowan. Some say he wept for a friend who had given himself to the Shadow, and some say for Malkir. The Lord of Faldara shook his head sadly. The first peal of the doom of the Seven Towers had been struck. There was no time to gather aid from Shinar or Arafel, and no hope that Malkir could stand alone with 5,000 of her lances dead in the blasted lands, her border forts overrun. Al-Akir and his queen, Eliana, had land brought to them in his cradle. Into his infant hands they placed the sword of Malkiri kings, the sword he wears today. A weapon made by Aes Sedai during the War of Power, the War of the Shadow that brought down the Age of Legends. They anointed his head with oil, naming him Daishan, a diademed battle lord, and they consecrated him as the next king of the Malkiri, and in his name they swore the ancient oath of Malkiri kings and queens. Agilmar's face hardened, and he spoke the words as if he too had sworn that oath, or one much similar. To stand against the Shadow so long as iron is hard and stone abides. To defend the Malkiri while one drop of blood remains. To avenge what cannot be defended. The words rang in the chamber. Eliana placed a locket around her son's neck for remembrance, and the infant, wrapped in swaddling clothes by the queen's own hand, was given over to 20 chosen from the king's bodyguard. The best swordsmen, the most deadly fighters. Their command, to carry the child to Falmorin. Then did Al-Akir and Eliana lead the Malkiri out to face the Shadow one last time. There they died at Herod's Crossing, and the Malkiri died, and the Seven Towers were broken. Shinar and Arafel and Kandor met the Halfmen and the Trollocs at the Stair of Jahan, and threw them back, but not as far as they had been. Most of the Malkir remained in Trolloc hands, and year by year, mile by mile, the Blight has swallowed it. Agilmar drew a heavy-hearted breath. When he went on, there was a sad pride in his eyes and voice. Only 5 of the bodyguards reached Falmorin alive. Every man wounded, but they had the child unharmed. From the cradle they taught him all they knew. He learned weapons as other children learned toys, and the Blight, as other children, their mother's garden. The oath sworn over his cradle is graven in his mind. There is nothing left to defend, but he can avenge. He denies his titles, yet in the borderlands he is called the Uncrowned. And if ever he raised the Golden Crane of Malkir, an army would come to follow. But he will not lead men to their deaths. In the Blight he courts death as a suitor courts a maiden, but he will not lead others to it.
If you must enter the Blight, and with only a few, there is no man better to take you there, nor to bring you safely out again. He is the best of the warders, and that means the best of the best. You might as well leave these boys here to gain a little seasoning and put your entire trust in Lan. The Blight is no place for untried boys. Matt opened his mouth and shut it again at a look from Rand. I wish he'd learned to keep it shut. Nynaeve had listened just as wide-eyed as Egwene, but now she was staring into her cup again, her face pale. Egwene put a hand on her arm and gave her a sympathetic look. Moraine appeared in the doorway, Lan at her heels. Nynaeve turned her back on them.
"What did he say?"
Rand demanded. Matt rose, and Perrin too.
"Country oaf," Aglamar muttered, then raised his voice to a normal tone. "Did you learn anything, Aes Sedai, or is he simply a madman?"
"He is mad," Moraine said, "or close to it. But there is nothing simple about Padan Fain."
One of the black-and-gold liveried servants bowed his way in with a blue wash basin and pitcher, a bar of yellow soap and a small towel on a silver tray. He looked anxiously at Aglamar. Moraine directed him to put them on the table.
"Your pardon for commanding your servants, Lord Aglamar," she said. "I took the liberty of asking for this."
Aglamar nodded to the servant, who put the tray on the table and left hurriedly.
"My servants are yours to command, Aes Sedai."
The water Moraine poured into the basin steamed as if only just off the boil. She pushed up her sleeves and began vigorously washing her hands without regard for the heat of the water.
"I said he was worse than vile, but I did not come close. I do not believe I have ever met someone so abject and debased, yet at the same time so foul. I feel soiled from touching him, and I do not mean for the filth on his skin. Soiled in here."
She touched her breast.
"The degradation of his soul almost makes me doubt he has one. There is something worse to him than a dark friend." "He looked so pitiful," Egwene murmured. "I remember him arriving in Emmon's Field each spring, always laughing and full of news from outside. Surely there's some hope for him. No man can stand in the shadow so long that he cannot find the light again," she quoted.
The Aes Sedai tiled her hands briskly.
"I have always believed it so," she said. "Perhaps Padan Fain can be redeemed. But he has been a dark friend more than 40 years, and what he has done for that, in blood and pain and death, would freeze your heart to hear. Among the least of these, though not small to you, I suspect, he brought the Trollocs to Emmon's Field." "Yes," Rand said softly. He heard Egwene gasp. "I should have guessed. Burn me, I should have, as soon as I recognized him."
"Did he bring any here?" Matt asked.
He looked at the stone walls around them and shivered. Rand thought he was remembering the Murdral more than Trollocs. Walls had not stopped the fate at Bearlawn or at Whitebridge.
"If he did," Aglamar laughed, "they'll break their teeth on the walls of Faldara. Many others have before."
He was speaking to everyone, but obviously addressing his words to Egwene and Nynaeve from the glances he gave them.
"And do not worry yourself about half-men, either."
Matt's face reddened.
"Every street and alley in Faldara is lit by night, and no man may hide his face inside the walls."
"Why would Master Fain do that?" Egwene asked. 3 years ago...
With a heavy sigh, Moraine sat down, folding up as if what she had done with Fain had drained her.
3 years this summer, as far back as that. The light surely favors us, else the Father of Lies would have triumphed while I still sat planning in Tar Valon. 3 years, Fain has been hunting you for the Dark One."
"That's crazy," Rand said. "He's come into the Two Rivers every spring as regular as a clock." 3 years? We've been right there in front of him, and he never looked at any of us twice before last year."
The Aes Sedai pointed a finger at him, fixing him.
"Fain told me everything, Rand, or almost everything. I believe he managed to hold back something, something important despite all I could do. But he said enough. 3 years ago, a half-man came for him in a town in Murundi. Fain was terrified, of course, but it is considered a very great honor among dark friends to be so summoned. Fain believed he had been chosen for great things, and he had,
though not in the manner he believed. He was brought north to the Blight, to the Blasted Lands, to Sheol Ghul, where he met a man with eyes of fire who named himself Balzaman. Matt shifted uneasily, and Rand swallowed hard. It had to have been that way, of course, but that did not make it any easier to accept. Only Perrin looked at the Aes Sedai as if nothing could surprise him any longer.
"The Light protect us," Agamar said fervently.
"Fain did not like what was done to him at Sheol Ghul," Moraine continued calmly. "While we talked, he screamed often a fire and burning. It almost killed him, bringing it all out from where he had it hidden. Even with my healing, he is a shattered ruin. It will take much to make him whole again. I will make the effort, though, if for no other reason than to learn what more he still hides. He had been chosen because of where he did his peddling." "No," she said quickly, when they stirred. "Not the Two Rivers only, not then. The Father of Lies knew roughly where to find what he sought, but not much better than we in Tarvalen. Fain said he has been made the Dark One's hound, and in a way he is right. The Father of Lies set Fain to hunt, first changing him so he could carry out that hunt. It is the things done to bring about those changes that Fain fears to remember. He hates his master for them as much as he fears him. So Fain was sent sniffing and hunting through all the villages around Berlon, and all the way to the Mountains of Mist, and down to Tarin, and across into the Two Rivers."
"3 springs ago," Perrin said slowly.
"I remember that spring.
Fain came later than usual, but what was strange was that he lingered on. A whole week he remained, idle and gnashing his teeth about laying out money for a room at the Wine Spring Inn. Fain likes his money."
"I remember now," Matt said. "Everybody was wondering, was he sick, or had he fallen for a local woman? Not that any of them would marry a peddler, of course. As well marry one of the traveling people."
Egwene raised an eyebrow at him, and he shut his mouth.
"After that, Fain was taken to Sheol Ghul again, and his mind was distilled."
Rand's stomach turned over at the tone in the Aes Sedai's voice. It told more of what she meant than the grimace that flashed across her face.
"What he had sensed was concentrated and fed back. When he entered the Two Rivers the next year, he was able to choose his targets out more clearly. Indeed, more clearly even than the Dark One had expected. Fain knew for a certainty that the one he sought was one of 3 in Emmon's Field."
Perrin grunted, and Matt began cursing in a soft monotone that even Nynaeve's glare did not stop. Agamar looked at them curiously. Rand felt only the faintest chill, and wondered at it. 3 years the Dark One had been hunting him. Hunting them. He was sure it should have made his teeth chatter.